Sports Leader.
And boom! Why should anybody aspire to be a common man, an average man? Do you realize what it means to be average? That means you're the best of the lousiest. And the lousiest of the best. Now, if we demand more and more for producing less and less, while the have-not nations encourage and inspire and indeed require hard work and maximum effort, if we deify the common men while they encourage and reward the uncommon ones, well, the end result of such a lopsided race as that is too obvious to require elaboration.
I mean, it's like, hello.
Columbia 300 launches the Spanish version of the website, and I think, as we know with everything going on right now in the United States with the Spanish-speaking and everything, this is pretty huge, I guess, for them to take the step there to put a Spanish version website out.
Well, I guess it's kind of got to happen because the Spanish are beginning to take such a stronghold in life itself, and they can no longer be ignored.
Tuesday night.
What do you think of my defense now?
Fourth in the North. This is the Common Man, Dan Cole.
The Young and the Restless, the Bold and the Beautiful. And I had a third that I made up because, you know, comedy comes in threes. We talked about that with Marnie Gelder, my first opportunity to ever be on the air with Marnie. And I was discussing comedy with her because she's part of the big comedy, the Power Trip Morning Show. A comedy extravaganza coming up Thursday at Canterbury Park, where the people love to play. Canterbury Park, where it's summer every day, horses sing. And I used to say the Young and the Restless, the Bold and the Beautiful. And then I think I was the Dead and the Near Dead or something. If somebody can remember what it was that I said, because it was really funny, and I'd like to remember what it was so I could beat that into the ground again. I was told that it was roughly 74 and partly cloudy when the Tenda Fitzgerald pushed away from port and set sail yesterday.
Yeah.
And then, much like the charity event I was at, that got, I bet it was almost an hour and 90 minutes that we were delayed and had to come back into the clubhouse because of inclement weather. It sounds like inclement weather also. The waters got rough, and the Tenda Fitzgerald went from a search and rescue mission to a recovery mission only, and that it dashed upon the rocks of Lake Inferior. Did you feel like that? How did you do yesterday? Did you feel like it went well?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the same as every other Tenda Fitzgerald, but I do like that. I think in previous years, you might be gone for 3 days, or you might take a week off, and now you've seen enough of the Tenda Fitzgerald where you just take off one day at a time. So we can't have... We can't have them on the air for more than one day.
Do you remember the show One Day at a Time?
No.
You don't remember that. That was with Eddie Van Halen's... she wasn't his wife at the time,
But she ended up marrying. It was a pretty good show. I remember it was kind of in my teenage years is when it first came up. It was Valerie Bertinelli, I think is her name. Definitely a yeah, baby, lowercase d. And then her co-star on the show, if I'm not mistaken, was Mackenzie Phillips, who was the daughter. She was the creation of the loins of John Phillips and whatever the other. Her mother and father were one half of the mamas and the papas.
Really?
Yes. And they gave birth to Mackenzie. And Mackenzie Phillips had all sorts of, I think, drug and alcohol problems. And I think her career just spiraled out of control. I have no idea what she's doing now. And so the show was basically about a divorced mother with two teenage daughters. And I don't remember, I can see her, but I can't remember the mother, the star of the show.
Bonnie Franklin?
Bonnie Franklin, that's exactly right. And it's a good show. I mean, it was entertaining. I mean, as, you know, I was younger then.
Lasted 9 seasons.
Yeah, it was a 9-season show. It was a very good show. And then I don't know when Valerie met Eddie, but Eddie and Valerie Bertinelli. I think they were together for a very long time, too. I think it was one of those rock and roll Hollywood showbiz romances that lasted a while. You know, a lot of times, you know, the divorce papers are in before the wedding pictures are out of the Polaroid. That was a better joke when Polaroid cameras were in vogue. My kids don't believe this stuff. I've recanted these tales. By the way, did I tell you this? If I use a word like I used the word the other day in front of Pete, I said something about, I can't concern myself with your foibles. And it's a word he's never heard before. He's a bright kid.
I've never heard of it until I was with you.
And he goes, foibles? He goes, you're such a boomer. That's what they say to me. Anytime I use a word like that or do something that they think is dino days, you're such a boomer. And then he just laughs. He thinks that I go, why don't you expand your mind a little bit and get a bigger vocabulary than backpacking? And like if you know what they say if dinner's really good? Mom goes, how's dinner? And they'll go, slamming.
Slamming.
Slamming means really good. Slamming. I need to bring back the kids segment. It won Big Ticket Basket, the host of Basket to Basket, and won him a City Pages award, if you'll remember. My kids segment won him an award. People love the kids segment. And all we did was we just picked up Urban Dictionary and you and I would just kind of talk back and forth and we would just, like now, the Urban Dictionary we used, that bit was so long ago that most of those words are out of style, I'm sure, right? I can't remember the words we used. Well, that was when they were combining words, remember? And you know what Deuce and Baby Brother Peter do if I do the combination? Like if it's like chillaxin, they just look at me and roll their eyes. They go, nobody says chillaxin anymore.
No.
So you would, but that word, there was a time where, and I don't know when that was like 5-8 years ago, something like that, that's what the kids did. They would mix, they would take two words and create one. What are you doing? I'm just chillaxing. So instead of chilling I don't have to explain it to you, right? Chill and relax. Chillaxing. So, you know, now it would be, wow, dinner was slamming. You know, he's backpacking the radio station. So maybe we could bring back kids segment. What are we doing today?
What are we doing today?
A radio show. That's right. Yeah. Sometimes I forget I'm on the radio.
We got some new stuff today. Which is rare.
This is at 1:35. We've had her on one other time, right?
Yes.
Katrina Allen. You may recognize the name or not. We're tired of all the other sports. Is your whole life just sports? Radio shows doing all. They just do the same four sports over and over again: football, hockey, baseball, basketball. And then they always, and it's always basically based on testosterone and men, the men's sports. We started to branch out, and Katrina Allen is one of us.
She is.
And she, she's a...
We talked to her like in January, wasn't it? In December or January?
She's a pro disc golfer, and she just won the Pro Disc Golf League's World Championship, whatever. World Championship. She won the whole thing.
In dramatic fashion.
So we're having her at 1:35. Then we decided with Rosen out all week, we came up with an idea that, well, we should have somebody do the 2 o'clock hour, take Rosen's. Yeah. But not, I mean, he's irreplaceable. Trust me, no one... can steal a take like Mark Rosen. So whoever we have, hopefully the person that whoever it might be, he or she, they'll steal takes and try to do a little bit of a Rosen bit.
It's kind of like when Johnny Carson was out, you'd have a fill-in host.
Yes, correct. Yeah. So, and we decided to, came up with the idea, how about if I just surprise you with somebody?
Yeah.
And I said, sure.
A mystery guest.
Yeah, why not? So we have a mystery guest, and this is the truth, the whole truth, or at least some semblance of the truth. I have no idea.
No.
And
you don't know who's going to be here.
If I asked him, he wouldn't tell me, and I wouldn't ask, because I don't want to, because it's part of the fun of having to see who it might be. All I said to him before we came on air is, I hope it's somebody who can form 3 and 4 word sentences better than I can. You know, I don't want to have to draw too much on. I hope it's somebody you can just, like, the one thing with Rose and the beauty of it, I should wait to eat lunch until 2, because you ask Rose, that's a guy.
He can go on forever.
His long rambling diatribes are longer than a big ticket question. I mean, he can just go on and on and on and on, which there are days I enjoy that when I really don't have much to say, that he can fill all of that time.
So every day this week we'll have a new mystery guest at 2 o'clock. You are unaware.
Three days anyways, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right?
Well, Friday.
Oh, what are we doing Friday?
We have program password.
Right, but I mean without Rosen's
out, so it's you and Lil B. I have locked in Corey Cove.
Okay.
But I've also locked in a mystery guest to play program password and then stay with you stay with you until the end of the show.
So there are four mystery guests.
We got mystery guests all week.
Mystery guests this week. And again, I think that's kind of fun. I look forward to that. Well, and I hope the listeners will as well. Surprise, surprise, surprise. I just like surprise. Remember Johnny Surprise? Superstar Mike Morris's old pal. He used to... that's a long story. I'll tell it some other time. Let's take a break. We'll come back. And on the other side of the break, Tenneby, I'm no longer the Randy Dobnak of 1314 Insane Lane. I'll explain. Other side of the break is the Common Man program on the Fan.
Just take those old records off the shelf.
Minnesota Vikings training camp is coming, beginning Wednesday, July 28th. 14 practices are open to fans. Find complete ticket information at vikings.com/training camp. The fans' coverage of Vikings training camp is presented by Minnesota Lottery.
Double 13-14 pass here. Common Man program. I'm Comedy's Tenneby. No Mark Rosen this week. He's out. Mystery guest, 2 o'clock. Katrina Allen, who is, she's one of us. She just won the pro disc golf world championship in dramatic fashion. And she got the 10 grand to go with it. She's made almost $250,000 throwing a frisbee. It's a pretty good gig.
That ain't bad.
It's a pretty good gig if you can get it. I used to say, I should have learned to play the guitar, should have learned to play them drums, that ain't working, that's the way you do it, money for nothing, your chicks. I should have learned to throw that frisbee. I mean, because that's not a bad way. And she, you know, if you look at her, we had her on before, and she was just like, she was a bartender. She was tending bar. And then she, I think as the story goes, she caddied for a friend who was doing disc golf, and she said, well, that looks kind of fun.
I think she went to an event. I think there was an event nearby.
Yeah, and next thing you know, she became, she's a world champion, Tenneby. She is a world champion. It happened yesterday. You know, there for the longest time, it's been, I can't tell you how many years, you know, Deuce is 18 now. Baby brother Peter just turned 16 yesterday. Loins, the whole thing. And I don't know exactly when I became the Randy Dobnak of 1314 Insane Lane for the, you know, for Cole family, where I'm Uber driver, right?
Yeah.
You know, I suppose Deuce started doing soccer at what age? 4, 5, something like that is I think when they start. So he started playing soccer a couple years behind him. And from that point on, I've always been, for the most part, you know, my lovely wife Potato will occasionally do the Ubering or the lifting or the commuting. But it's generally been me. You know, maybe Brother Peter wants to go to a buddy's house. I got to drive him over. Then I got to go pick him up. Mm-hmm. They got a basketball practice. They got a basketball game. He's got soccer. This, that. Got to go there. Yeah, go shop. Whatever the case may be. And it's okay. It's part of being a dad. It's part of being a parent. It just comes with the territory, right? I'm not complaining. But after a while, it becomes, a lot of times it's at maybe the most inopportune times. You just get settled in.
Yeah.
Got a coffee next to me. Got the crossword puzzle out. Dad, I need a ride. Okay. Baby brother Peter passed his driver's test yesterday.
Oh.
Yes, it was very nice. So now baby brother Peter, and he passed first time. Of the Magnificent Seven is what I call the dog pound. Pete calls them the dog pound. It's his six best friends that have been hanging around for a long time together. Their names will remain anonymous. But all seven now have a driver's license. Pete's the youngest of the seven. All seven have a driver's license. I think four of them, it took them twice. They failed the first time before they passed the second time. And I asked Pete, leading up to his test yesterday as we were practicing, I said, do you ever like tease the other guys about failing the first time, having to go a second? He goes, just a little bit, because I want to see if I pass first, because you don't want to give them a hard time, and then it happens to you, and then all of a sudden you've got mud on the face. So now I think he's going to probably start ribbing him a little bit more about, how could you fail the first time? It was the simplest thing I ever did. I did it. And I said, I looked at the driving instructor and said, Mom, look, no hands. I told him when he got in there, the guy should have got in and he should have had something dangling from the rearview mirror. He should have had stuff all over the dashboard, which of course you can't do.
Yeah.
Should have the music cranked
distractions.
Up. Just have the music cranked up when the instructor got in and go, I weigh 145 pounds and it's on my right foot. Hop in, old man. We're going to go and pass this driving test.
Brilliant.
Which I don't think would go over very well.
No.
So he passed it.
Now with driving tests, because cell phones didn't exist when I was getting my drive. Do they have like a cell phone sitting there that it will randomly ring to see if it distracts you or not?
No, but I've heard they do try to trick kids a little bit. On some of these closed courses, they'll have like a road that really doesn't have any. Like Pete says he was at Arden Hills and there was a two-lane road, but there was nothing to designate it was two lanes. I mean, it's four lane. But there wasn't a line between us. The guy said, you're trying to kind of driving down the middle here. You might want to move over. But when he got to the end, the guy said, I don't know what to tell you, dude, you passed. And so that was it. So we got it. So now I never have to, I tell you what, it's like a battle between Deuce and I to go, like if we have to go pick him up or something, he'll text and say, need a ride, can you come and get me in 20 minutes? And I'll go, Deuce. He goes, I don't want to pick up my brother. I've got things to do. He's such a loser. Why can't he walk? Why doesn't he ride a bike? He's got a bike. My kids never rode their bikes. Never.
Really?
Well, we talked hitchhiking last week. I either hitchhiked or biked. I hiked or biked wherever I went. I didn't get a ride from Mom anywhere. Did you get rides from your parents to go? I never got rides to go places.
I mean, it's far enough away.
Yeah, well, we never went far enough away. We weren't allowed to go far enough away. The only time I got a drive was when we would go to football practice. Back in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I was Coon Rapids Athletic Association, played both sides of the ball, fierce pass rushing, rock of Gibraltar, blah. And then we would drive to that because that was, like you said, that was a long way away and you got the football equipment on. But otherwise, if I wanted to go to a buddy's house and he was 4 miles away, you better get walking. Better get a bike. There was, if you wanted to go a long way, you had to find a way. They were just going to drive you around like a taxi cab service. Kids are soft nowadays. I'm just telling you, they are. You can say that, back in my day, we walked uphill both ways, barefoot and 3 feet of snow, but it was true. You walk home from school. If you miss the bus, you walk home. From Adam's school to our house, through the neighborhoods, we took the back way through the woods. There was a trail. That was a half-hour walk. You blew it. Sorry. You blew it. Right? And then don't ride anywhere. You're out of your mind. But now I don't have to. I'm free. I don't have to drive it. Of course, now I have the fear of the fender benders. Knock on wood, in 2 years, 2+ years of driving, Deuce has had zero tickets and no fender benders. Pete went out last night after, you know, mom went with him over to pass the test, right? Or to take the test. And then when they got back home, by the way, mom, and I don't blame her, and I don't hold it against her, she's never taken the kids out to practice drive because she would be too terrified to have them behind sure. the wheel. So I've done all the tricks. I told you what I did. First time, baby brother Peter, we're at the gas station. We filled up the gas. Are you ready to start? He goes, yeah. I go, I tossed him the keys and go, let's go. He pulled out of the gas station, right out into the road. And went. I said, let's get on the freeway. You mean it's baptism by fire? Yeah. We're not going to go in a parking lot and practice. The best part of the parallel park, we did enough. He didn't practice parallel parking or back-end parking until the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Never done it. A week before his driver's test. We hadn't done it, which I don't know if that was good or bad. It ends up being good. He caught on to it pretty quick, right? But it was funny. So this weekend, we're parallel parking over at Eastridge. They got cones that they leave out there for Safeway driving, right? The driving instructors. So then you can use them when you go out. So we pull up there. We set the cones up, and Pete's trying a couple of... It was like a bad sitcom.
That's harder with cones, by the way. You need the actual...
So he's trying to back in, and it's not working well. I go, here, let me show you how you do it. And I get into the car, and he's kind of kiddy-wampus. Have you ever heard of the word kiddy-wampus?
Yeah.
See if that's an actual word, if it's one word or if it's two. We're kind of kiddy-wampus in there, and I go, here, let me show you how to do it. I get in, and I got both windows rolled on. He's out of the car. I'm not making this up, Tennessee. I say to him, you got to remember, though... Pete, I'm an expert at this. And right when I say expert, as I'm driving out, I ran over one of the cones.
No!
Just crumpled underneath. He loved that. But he figured it out. He got in, he got out, and we're done. And now I don't have to, I'm free to fall asleep on the couch and don't have to worry about picking him up. It's so nice. Did you look up kiddy-wampus?
Kiddy-wampus, disorganized, poorly done, chaotic.
Sounds like the Common Man program. Maybe we should call it they've changed the name of the late afternoon show to Basket to Basket. Maybe we should change our show to the kiddy-wampus show.
I always
are you a cat guy or are you a dog guy? I can't remember. That's right. You're a dog guy. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Brian Oak. Brian Oaks was listening and said, hey, would you like me to come on and talk about the boxing? Because he was at the fights on, I got him tickets for the fights at the Armory. He said, and then I can correct all your misinformation about Mackenzie Phillips at the same time. So we're going to chat with Oak on the side of the break. And then 1 o'clock, 5, 3, 4, 1:35, Katrina Allen. She's the new pro disc golf world champion. And then mystery guest at 2 o'clock here on The Fan.
FAN.
Best thing you ever done for me used to help me take my life less seriously. It's only life after all.
Couple 13, 14 Fast Common Man program. I'm Comedy's Tennessee. Delighted and excited to be joined by City's 97 Kingpin, a.k.a. Brian Oak of the City's 97 Morning Show. Again, Mr. Oak, how are you, me boy?
I'm great, man, and it's funny. I know that you guys think it's funny to mention the Indigo Girls, me being the president of the fan club,
correct,
et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Did you know that the Indigo Girls were in Minnesota last night to play a free concert?
I did not know that. Where were they at?
They were at a protest to, quote, protect the water concert is what it was called. It was a protest against the Enbridge Pipeline 3 through northern Minnesota, and they were here to play absolutely for free and the effort of water protection. So you can do all the jokey-joke, fun things you want about the Indigo Girls, but you know what I know? Is if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything, and the Indigo Girls believe that as well. Plus,
brilliant!
They're incredible live. They are really, truly an amazing live duo. So, I don't know. If I could be bothered to fill out the paperwork, maybe I would be the president.
No, I don't know. Hold on. I got to write that down. If you don't stand, hold on. I'm using that.
I've got another one you can tack onto that. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. You can tack that one down as well.
If you don't stand for something, you'll
fall for anything.
You'll fall for anything.
And that's an apostrophe double L, exactly.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to that might work as far as when I try to reel people in, when I fish for people. You'll fall for anything.
And they do quite often, don't they? I know some of it's got to be a bit, but I love it when someone calls up and they want to correct you on something musically. One of my favorite parts of being a lifelong member of the Commonwealth is when someone really calls in and in their heart of hearts, they think they're helping you or guiding you to a true point. And even when you play the fishing noise, they still don't understand precisely what has happened. One of my favorite parts about listening to the ground.
And then what always tickles my fancy is they'll say, "Long-time listener." Well, if they've been listening that long, don't they know I'm reeling them in? It's so good.
It is. It is. No, when you say, is it the Joker? Is that Cesar Romero saying?
Yeah, here it is right here.
That is. It truly is delicious. It's one of my favorite lunchtime treats. Hey, I wanted to call you for two reasons. One, real quick, because I know you know your stuff, but I just wanted to say Mackenzie Phillips, and I love One Day at a Time, the Schneider character as the handyman, the maintenance guy in the apartment building.
Right.
One of the great character bits of the 1970s. But Mackenzie, actually, she was the daughter of John Phillips, but it wasn't Michelle Phillips. That was his first wife, a woman named Susan Stewart Adams.
Uh-huh.
They separated. But he does have a daughter with Michelle Phillips. That would be China Phillips, who is the lead singer of the popular 90s group Wilson Phillips, that also features two of Brian Wilson's daughters. And they had the huge hit Hold On. That was a hit in the 90s and then brought back through The Beauty of Bridesmaids. So I know it's splitting hairs. I know it's a small fact, but I know that accuracy is crucial to you when you do all your homework here on the Grum.
As a matter of fact, and then someone emailed, and I think I do remember this, but I don't want to make accusations that are unfounded. Wasn't there some kind of sordid deal with John Phillips having some relations with Mackenzie Phillips' daughter?
No, it's pretty well established. There's been a couple small people who have denied it, but even John Phillips never completely denied it. He tried to frame it in a different context.
Yeah.
But no, having a daughter myself who's a grown woman, what John Phillips did to Mackenzie Phillips, I'm surprised it was only drug and alcohol problems that plagued her much of her life. No, despicable, and I don't even want to say the word that starts with the letter I, but all you have to do is do a brief search on the internet. And yeah, there can be a lot of lascivious rumors out there, but no, he was truly a pig and a bad person. And no, I can't imagine the ways that he scarred literally his own flesh and blood, his own daughter.
Do you know what she is doing nowadays? I mean,
I did a little digging prior to talking to you, and I couldn't find much. You know, she keeps a pretty low profile. I know she was married for, up until about the year 2000, but really there's very, very little online about what it is she's doing now, you know, because most people are so caught up in the hideous, lascivious story of what happened between her and her father. That dominates just about anything that you can find on the internet. But yeah, what she's up to these days is, you know, it's hard to find.
I was the other half of that long rambling diatribe I had, I think, was correct. Eddie and Val Bertinelli, they were together for many, many years, right? That wasn't just like one of those, year and a half, 2 year things, and then it flamed out. They were together for many years, correct?
A very, very long time. And in fact, even once it ended between them, I believe they were still sort of decent to each other. And I know that she was right there towards the end of Eddie's life, tweeting a bunch and sharing information. Obviously, they have a child together, Wolfgang, who's got his own band out now. And, no, I think that they still maintained, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, who could know? We're not there, right? But I mean, relatively speaking, a healthy, at least decent, you know, kind relationship with one another. And no, she was there and she was ruined at the end because, you know, father, someone she loved for decades and father of her child. And, so I think they were together for a very, very long time. But I will also go on record just because I'm also a dude who grew up in the 70s, Valerie Bertinelli on One Day at a Time, about as lowercase d lowercase d ever.
Oh yeah, she was a teen heartthrob.
And I was coming of age at that time where I still didn't quite understand exactly what was happening. But,
right.
Well,
and then remember, I brought, you know, when David Cassidy of the Partridge Family, passed away at that 5 years ago, I think it was, four, something like that. I did a Gone But Not Forgotten for David Cassidy because, you know, a lot of our listeners would have no idea who he is. But when it was that 1970, 71, 72 television show, The Partridge Family. You talk about your teen heartthrobs. I mean, he was selling more albums and selling out concerts than like the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin were. He was a megastar.
Like, if you weren't there, like I wasn't there. I was a little kid at the time. But going back and looking at it, looking at history, you look at all the sort of the most cartoonish aspects of Beatlemania, where they literally couldn't leave their hotel. There had to be multiple limos going in different directions. They had to use all these tactics just to get away from the rabid fans who would literally tear them apart. He went through that for about 3, 4, 5 years.
Correct.
During the Partridge Family, the peak of its fame. He literally was almost, what he said, was killed, but he was literally disrobed by a mob of girls who just wanted a lock of his hair, and he said he's never been more frightened in his entire life. And of course, that would all go very sour years later in his life.
Yeah.
But, you cannot overstate the frenzy and the frothiness over David Cassidy when he was at the peak of his fame in the early 70s.
And I loved the show, you know, because that was back when I was in elementary school, okay? And we loved the show. It was a cool show, you know, it was David, because every guy wanted to be David Cassidy. You wanted to be David Cassidy because he had the, you know, he had the feathered back hair and he was good looking and he was a pop star and you were thinking, I wish I was David Cassidy. You know, so and then the gals.
By the way, quick addendum. I just looked it up real quick. Quick addendum. Eddie Van Halen and Valerie Bertinelli were married for 26 years.
I was going to say a couple decades.
1981 to 2007. I mean, you know, so you're right. It wasn't one of those flash in the pan celebrity marriage things. They were together for a quarter century.
Yeah, I don't know what the average togetherness till death do us part or until I find somebody else or my husband or wife cheats on me, but I would think the average Hollywood or showbiz marriage, what do you think the average is? A few years, probably? Because it seems like they never last very long. Not in all cases. George Burns and Gracie Allen were together forever. I mean, Valerie Bertinelli and Eddie Van Halen, as you just said, 26 years, but most of them seems like it's a year and a half and it's over.
Yeah, well, I think that's obviously the exception, not the norm. You know, maybe they last 2 years, maybe the last 5 years, maybe the last seven. But going 26 years, there's obviously more there than just the, hey, let's make some celebrity news, let's have a flash in the pan. There's obviously a real relationship happening there. And I will say this, and again, I'm not trying to be creepy or reduce women to a certain thing, but even recent pictures of Valerie Bertinelli, lowercase.
Yeah, a very attractive young lady. Now, let me...
wonderful, but I mean, yeah, so, but you're actually speaking to something more important. Yes, they had a real relationship for a long time, gave birth to Wolfgang Van Halen, who, by the way, just put out a brand new record last week. So, you know, he's still carrying on. I mean, he still drums occasionally with, you know, Van Halen, obviously, before his dad died, and, you know, carrying on the musical tradition of the proud Van Halen name.
How old are you now? I'm 62.
I don't care at all. I don't care. Yeah. I'm 53 years old.
Okay, 53 years old. You've experienced quite a bit in your life. You had a first time experience though on Sunday night. Is that correct?
I owe it all to you as well. That's absolutely correct. So in my 53 years, and I'm going to tell you right now, I've been in a lot of arenas in my life, Never once in my entire life, and I've taken the kids to see Dragon Tales live. I've gone to, you know, theaters to see all kinds of musical theater, even opera. I did something on Sunday in a major venue that I've never done before in my life, and that was to go see a live full card of boxing down at the Armory, compliments of your generosity, and get me in there. And it's weird because I just never thought, like, you know, like, I'm not, like, really adverse to the violence of it, but I'm not really drawn to it. It's just something I never, ever thought about doing, even though over the years, hearing you wax poetically about all of the nuances of the sweet science and the squared circle, it just was nothing that ever, like, drew me enough to be like, I'm going to a boxing match. So on Sunday night, I found myself not only at my first boxing match, but at my first title fight where... not just the title fight, but even the fight before, featured two undefeated combatants.
Yeah,
right?
And cruiserweights.
There are most sports other than the NFL I do not care about at all. But once we get down to do or die time, once we're in the playoffs, once we're in win or go home mode, then suddenly every single moment's at stake. Every pitch matters. Every punch matters, whatever the case is. It was thrilling, man. I cannot thank you enough for those tickets. I had a fantastic time on Sunday at the Armory watching that title fight and the rounds that led up to it.
Yeah, well, and as you know, you had, I think, ninth row seats. You're close to the action. You can see it.
Oh, yeah.
All. You can see everything.
I mean, if you want to spend big bucks, you can get literally ringside,
yeah.
But you don't have to. The seats I was in, I did a little digging around thinking like, well, man, if I want to come back and do this in the future, my seats were $25. And that was a five-hour boxing
yeah.
card. I think there were, what, eight or nine matches?
Yep, yep.
You know, some of them
nine
four
of
rounds,
them.
Some of them 10 rounds, some of them 12 rounds. And it was thrilling the whole time. The other thing I loved is, given Minnesota, I mean, look, the next time you go out to a major event, look at the demographics and the makeup of the crowd you're in. This was the most diverse, wildly up and down, rich to poor, every single color
correct.
Person in this community.
You are correct.
Everybody was there, and everybody was having a fantastic time. Nobody was in a bad mood.
No.
And they just, it made me think of going back to the old Roman times or Grecian times, being at the Colosseum. It was like a gladiatorial type battle. But again, no one's getting taken advantage of, right? No one's getting killed in the ring. Well, except for Mario Cesaris. He just got destroyed.
Yeah, he got knocked out round, 232 into round number one. By the local kid, David Morrell Jr., who defected from Cuba a number of years ago, had an exceptional amateur record. And in his third pro fight, he won the WBA super middleweight championship, and he defended it on Sunday night, and you saw he hit him with just two devastating left hands.
It was crazy, man. I mean, like, so I watched the round right before that, and I can't remember their names, unfortunately, because this is all brand new to me, but there was the guy from Nigeria, and there was the guy from Atlanta.
The Nigerian, it was the Nigerian bull,
what's that?
The Nigerian bulldog, and then the other guy was, he was bulletproof. His nickname
like
was
Denny
Bulletproof.
Or Darren or Damon or something?
His nickname was Bulletproof. That's all I remembered. Was a Nigerian bulldog, and the other guy was, his nickname was Bulletproof.
Well, and so you've got these guys, but they are both built like something out of a video game. They are both incredibly, impossibly massive, muscular men, literally pounding six different types of dog crap out of each
yes.
other. Is it 10 or 6, by the way?
Well, I usually say a couple 13, 14, but yeah, six
okay.
different kinds.
Well, okay,
six
they
different
were,
kinds.
They were kicking a couple 13, 14 types of dog crap out of each other, and they went the full 10 rounds, and I couldn't believe it because, I mean, I'm watching these blows land, and these guys are taking them, but they've trained on it, right? That's
yeah.
their whole life. But these two dudes were meant to take the punishment and not just deliver that one crazy knockout blow. But neither of them had ever lost before, and on a split decision, one of them lost. So I'm like, wow, I wonder how the title fight's going to go. And, you know, I get up at 4 a.m. every day to host the morning show on City 97, and it was Sunday night. So I'm like, man, you know, I hope this doesn't go too long. And I talked to my friend. I actually went with our mutual friend, Paul Charchian, who also said thank you, by the way, for the ticks. And hello?
Yep, we're here. He gave you a bell for dropping a name.
Oh, name dropping. Yeah, yeah. We're watching it, and I'm like, you know, I hope this doesn't go too long because I can't stay up that late. And we're watching, and it's a great start. And, of course, you know, the challenger, Mario Cesaris, comes out with all the fanfare and the giant sombrero and the music and everything. And David Morrell Jr., Minnesotan boy, kind of comes out and just sort of checks in. And as soon as he gets out there, though, the crowd's losing their mind.
Yeah.
What were we, 80 seconds into the first round before he absolutely busted Mario in the face? And again, you told me something that I didn't really know about this. I'm like, why not even a 10 count? It looked like he was sitting back up. But you tell me, like, the referees,
Mark
the
Nelson,
best of the best,
yeah.
they can look in the eyes and tell you, no way, this guy's bell is rung.
Yeah, he knew there was no chance he was going to get up, and all he would do is, the number one job of a referee, and everyone will tell you, is the safety of the two combatants. That's number one.
Right.
You know, Caleb Truax, who I told you about him, local kid, was once the IBF super middleweight champion of the world. His first title fight.
Your show a bunch.
His first title fight, he fought Danny Jacobs. He got stopped in the 12th and final round with about a minute to go. And at first, Caleb protested, right? Why are you stopping it? And he said later, the ref came to the locker room and said to him, I stopped it because you weren't going to win the fight. And when Caleb thought about it, he thought to himself, he was grateful. Because a guy doesn't want to quit. He's not going to go out on a shield, right? He wants to go out on a shield, and he wanted to see if he could go the distance. But that's not the ref's concern, that you want to go the distance. Sorry, I'm not letting you. You're not getting hurt under my watch. It ain't happening here. I'm stopping this fight.
It's a violent, violent sport, right? And so, I mean, that's the ref's ultimate job.
Correct.
And again, the punch I watched land until I saw it in replay, I'm like, well, that was a pretty good hit, but I watched way harder hits in the previous fight. But when you watch just how hard his bell got rung, just how squarely that punch landed, how definitively Cesaris went down, I think that this was an eye opener for me for a couple reasons. One, I love the crowd. Two, I love just the vibe. But three, I learned more about boxing in one night at the Armory that I'd never known before, even listening to an enlightened scholar like yourself on the Grump.
Thank you.
It was thrilling, man. And I'm just saying, like, if anybody is ever looking for a relatively inexpensive night out that you haven't done before, a little night of adventure, I know tons of people out there have been to fights before, but it was a new one for me.
Yeah.
And I loved it, man. I'm definitely going back.
It was a good time. We're out of time, but here's the thing. Okay. I'm gonna have to have you on again sometime soon, because I know that, you know, late November, Disney Plus will unveil the 3-part documentary called Get Back, about the Beatles. The famous movie producer guy, what's his name?
I got it in my head, but I can't think of it. Not is he the documentary guy?
Yeah, documentary guy, right. Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson.
One on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Peter Jackson. His name is Peter Jackson.
Oh, well, that's the Hobbit guy. That's the Lord of the Rings guy.
Peter Jackson. He's the one he's doing the documentary.
Get Back. Okay.
He's the guy that's done it. He took all the footage. This is the new one, not the first Get Back movie. This is brand new. It was supposed to have been out last year.
Oh.
It was going to be out in the movie theaters, but because it was, because of the pandemic, they put it off. It's coming out. I've been doing a lot of research on it. It's going to be spectacular. We're going to see the entire rooftop concert. We've never seen the entire rooftop concert before. We've only seen bits and pieces of it. They're going to have the entire rooftop concert. And the thing that what's big about the movie, what it unveils, and it was even a surprise to the Beatles themselves, the surviving Beatles. It was always thought of that the band during the when they were doing Let It Be, that it was just bitterness and anger and they all hated each other. McCartney and Starr both watch it and go, I forgot how much fun we really did have and how well we worked together. And there were moments, but the overall theme of the Peter Jackson Get Back film is it's almost night and day difference compared to what we thought of the Beatles breakup to where it happened. And it's supposed to be spectacular. So we'll talk about that next time we have you on. We always thank you for your time on the Grumpy Boy.
And I appreciate you guys letting me jump in. Can I plug one super quick thing that's happening in 2 days? Oak on the Water has not happened lakeside in 5.5 years, and that changes on Thursday. We are back at Maynard's for 3 hours. Yam House is going to be there. An incredible local Minnesota band is going to be there. We're at Maynard's 4 to 7. It's absolutely free and open to the public. Weather's supposed to be perfect. So if people are looking to start the weekend early, get a little distraction, I would love to have people come out to the return of Oak on the Water.
Any chance you could convince the Indigo Girls to drop by?
Well, look, man, they were just here and they were working on things slightly more important than hanging out by the lake. They were working on fighting the pipeline, all right? So let me let them finish their important work, and maybe we'll see if we can get them back.
Thanks, Babur. Appreciate that.
All right. Cheers, you guys.
You bet. That's Brian Oak, City's 97 Morning Show, 534, other side of the break, Tana.
Yeah, is there something fishy going on with all these baseball rainouts?
The Fan.
There's never been a good song with an electric fiddle in it, Tennessee. I don't know why you would play this. I guess Charge was back at it.
Really?
At least a couple, 13, 14 people emailed comment@cafeon.com. I think it was Friday. He said something to the effect, if a hobo can learn to play it, it's not an instrument. So in other words, a guitar, a washboard, a ukulele, he's just I think the only music he likes is that electronic dance music.
Yeah.
I think that's all he likes. And he thinks, the thing is, don't embarrass yourself by saying, like he did one time, there's never been a good song with a harmonica. Just say, it's much like, I'm not big on rap music. I'm not. It doesn't do anything for me. I think it's relatively simple to do. You just got to be able to talk real, rhyme pace, right? That you just got to be able to talk. You got to come up with lyrics and then you go, yo, what up? KFAN. It's not that difficult. Anyways, long story short, but I'm sure there's great rap music that people are better than others and do a wonderful job.
Sure.
And same thing with music. But to basically say, you could say, look, I prefer electronic dance music. That's my favorite. That's what I like. There's other great stuff out there, but I just like electronic dance music. But to suggest that if a hobo can learn to play it, it's not a real instrument, is breathtakingly preposterous.
Bizarre.
It was breathtakingly preposterous. And
he has great fantasy football takes, music, not so much.
Yeah, really bad musical takes. But anyways, time for 5-3-4, brought to you by Casey's General Store. They are here for good. Ain't going anywhere.
Now for 5 questions. Well, actually 3, but 5 sounds like more than 4. Brought to you by Casey's General Store. Casey's here for good. Question number 1.
We're gonna win, Twins. We're gonna score.
It's now time to delve deep into Twins territory.
Crack out a home run, shout a hip hooray! Cheer for the Minnesota Twins today.
The Twins had their game on Saturday against Cleveland postponed when there was very little precipitation. And last night's game in Chicago postponed as well, even though thunderstorms were done by 3:30 in the afternoon. Common, do you think the recent postponements have been fishy, and does Major League Baseball need to change who makes postponement decisions?
I saw that it was a talker regarding the Twins game. Was that, what day was
Saturday.
That? That was Saturday. And apparently the forecast had called for thunderstormy type weather. But the thunderstorms really never amounted to much, correct?
Light rain at times, yeah.
Light rain at best. And if, in talking to people and reading things and doing some intel, is the suspicion that it was just used as an excuse because the Twins might be the worst team in Major League Baseball, or one of them, and their bullpen is awful, and their starting staff can't get out of the second inning. So their pitching staff, particularly their bullpen, is so beleaguered. Is that a word?
Beleaguered?
Can you look up the word beleaguered? That would be like a major league player that's only gotten to the B level.
Their bullpen is definitely not big leaguered.
Wait, hold on. We'll send that to rewrite and have them punch it up. Beleaguered. Beleaguered. I think it's spelled like B and then like league. Like.
Beleaguer. Beleaguer.
To surround with military forces or to surround or beset as with troubles?
I guess I'm using the word incorrectly.
Beleaguer.
Not any other definitions to it?
That's it.
I thought beleaguered meant like you are you're spent. You've been beaten down. It's not working for you. You're exhausted. Beleaguered is what I thought that. So I guess you learn something every day. Brought to you by the University of Minnesota. I'm still waiting for a salesperson to sell that idea. They always want us to come up with ideas to sell. You come up with them and they don't get sold. That they called it off because the bullpen was too tired. It's like, well, let's just save our arms for later. Isn't that what I've heard?
Yes.
The rumor?
They had two guys that they wouldn't have been able to even pitch Saturday because they were
Do we think that is the case? I don't suppose the Twins are admitting to that, are they? Baldelli's not admitting that, right?
No, they're not going to admit it. No, it's all theories, conspiracy theories. But even media members are stepping and saying, this is pretty fishy.
And do they think the same thing happened in Chicago because the Chicago pitching staff is also beleaguered?
Their team is beat up.
Yeah, it's the sport's not helping itself. We talked about it last week. I saved a couple of emails. I actually planned to get in. There were a couple of topics from last week that we kind of scratched the surface on that I wanted to dig a bit deeper into throughout this week, including the tanking thing. I'm still obsessed with you, Rose, and all the other people out there that want to talk about, you know, we're going to build a culture here and see what it's like for those two guys to play together. That's just so meaningless. But anyway, we'll do that later in the week. But this league, you know, fewer kids are participating, fewer kids are watching, ratings are down. It's it's true. You can say whatever you want, but there are people that travel to come and see the club. There are people. I saw the story. I think it was in one of the fish wraps, and it was like in the comment section, or maybe it was in a story. Did you see the two little kids that were crying? They went to the game. Mom and, you know, dad brought them to the game, and the Twins just said, well, our arms are tired, so we're not going to play baseball today. If that's indeed what they did. And I have every reason to believe that's why, because I also saw something on the comment boards. Quit your crying. He wasn't talking about those kids. He was just talking about, you know, all the people complaining about it. Was quit your whining about it. They took the information that was best available to them, and it just didn't work. Because, you know, the weather forecast can be very unpredictable. But that's the point. Because it's unpredictable, you don't make that call until the weather is actually there or it's imminent.
Unless
right?
you're convinced. Which, but in this case, you weren't convinced.
Well, you weren't convinced, and even then, I mean, you had... Convinced, you have to be convinced, because we know that it's unpredictable. There can be weather forecasts that say 85 to 90% chance of showers and thunderstorms, and something changes over a few hour span, and it moves east, or it moves west, or north and south, and that 80% became 12%. It just does.
Well, and it was a 1 o'clock game, so you could have thunderstorms come in for 3 hours. You still have the rest. It's not like a 7 o'clock game where we're limited with time of night here.
You
had all day to get the game in.
So I have to believe that that's the reason they postponed that game. If they did the same thing as Chicago, that is unacceptable. You are in, I know for you guys, it's like, it's the World Series. It's everything. What does every guy say when they win? You know, it's what I dreamed about as a kid when I was 8 years old. We know it's important to you and all that, but at the bottom line is, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. And the people that are buying tickets and traveling to those games and buying concessions and paying for parking and buying sweat,
scheduling
they're
around
paying
it.
Your salaries. And the idea that you say, guess what? Then you know what you know, if you have two arms you can't use, you know what you do? You tell the starting pitcher, get your bleep together. We need six innings out of you today. Pitch like a pro. You're getting paid for it. We need six, and you get six out of them. And if it's 8-0 after three, he pitches six. What's the difference? The reliever you're putting in, he's going to give up four runs anyways. Your bullpen is awful. Your starting staff is awful. Your offense is awful. It's not going to make a difference. You're not coming back. You play the game and let the kids watch. It's just preposterous. And they wonder why, honestly, of all the organizations in town, that's the one that just, am I right or am I wrong?
You're 100% right. I miss your ranting. I loved it.
But think about that. Well, we don't have two arms that are ready. Well, guess what? The arm that you were going to bring in to take over, let's say your starter that day was Big Mike.
Yeah.
And let's say Big Mike gives up six in the first two innings. All right, it's 6-0. You're not winning that game anyway. So let Big Mike pitch two more innings, give up six more. What's the difference?
The league that lets you know it's just one game out of 162.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's wrong.
Question number two.
Go Vikings, let's win this game. You'll hear us yell for more.
It's now time to take an in-depth look at the state of the skull.
Go Vikings, let's go.
Lengthy question here. You can go ahead and eat. Bill Barnwell of ESPN wrote a story titled, "The NFL's Most Vulnerable Spots, 16 Teams That Have Depth Issues Behind Their Stars." And Barnwell had the Vikings' edge rusher spot behind Daniil Hunter as one of the vulnerable spots. He wrote, quote, "Did you see what happened with the Vikings in 2020? Hunter missed the entire season with a neck injury, and while they had Yannick Ngakoue on the roster to start the season, the organization gave up on the former Jag star and traded him to the Ravens at midseason. Minnesota finished with the league's fifth worst adjusted sack rate and was third worst in the NFL at getting pressure without blitzing. Hunter is back, and after agreeing to a revised contract, the 26-year-old is expected to report to training camp and be on the field to start the season. He has been hugely productive when available, but the Vikings would be lost again without their star pass rusher. Minnesota did add Sheldon Richardson this summer, but an edge duo of Jalen Holmes and Steven Weatherly doesn't have enough pass-rushing talent. The Vikings used mid-round picks on Patrick Jones and Janarius Robinson, but they shouldn't be counted on for significant contributions in their rookie campaigns. Common, are you concerned about the depth behind Daniil?
Well, is this Bill Barnwell?
Yeah.
I'd say, duh. But here's what I'll tell you, Tenenby. Who's the edge rusher for the Bears? Khalil Mack?
Yeah.
What kind of depth do you think the Bears have if Khalil Mack is out? Probably about the same as the Vikings. Who's the guy for the Rams? Is
Aaron Donald.
Is he an edge rusher?
No, he's in the middle.
All right. Give me another edge rusher.
Yannick Ngakoue.
If he's out, do you think the team he plays for is going to have some depth issues? I mean, it's just, he's just filling space on a website. He's right. I'm not going to argue with him. And do they have, do the Vikings have less depth than some other teams at edge rusher? I guess, probably. I don't know. But you take out your best. How about if Tom Brady's out of quarterback, what kind of depth do they have at back? Does anybody have depth at backup quarterback, one or two teams? Does any team have backup depth at running back? I know we like to think we do. We want to think that Madison is just as good as Cook and would start on 25 other teams. But, yeah, there would be an issue. He's not wrong. But I think for most teams, once you get past your starter in every position, there's some depth issues, some worse than others. But if Eric Kendricks gets injured and out for the year, what do you think our linebacking core looks like? What do you think?
Not good.
I don't think it's good. If Justin Jefferson gets a season-ending injury week three, what do you think our wide receiving core? It's a big drop-off. So, yeah, you have to stay as healthy as you possibly can. And your key positions are, I guess, quarterback's one, then edge rusher is considered two nowadays, right?
Left tackle and edge rusher.
Yeah, edge rusher and left tackle, those are your three. Yeah. And then after that, I don't know, if you want to go middle linebacker, I don't know, whatever. But, yeah, you lose those guys, you better have depth behind those, and it's difficult to have. It's so hard to find one good left tackle. Where are you going to find a guy that's a good backup that's on your team? If you have a good backup left tackle on your team, he's going to be a free agent the next year or two because he's going to go somewhere else. So,
and that's it for today's edition of 5 Questions. Well, actually, 3 questions, but 5 sounds like more than 4.
Something that I have said, and I'm not alone, but something that I have insisted upon for years and years and years, and it's left me verklempt about one of the 4 major pro sports leagues was, what's the word I'm looking for, I've been vindicated. I've been right all along. I'll explain on the other side of the break on the Common Man program right here on the Fan. Hey, if you're looking to sell your home,
my turn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're after traffic.
Oh, I'm after traffic. I apologize for that. You go ahead. Yeah. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'm dreaming about Underdog Fantasy. They're the new kid on the block for daily fantasy. They have celebrity investors such as Mark Cuban. You can get a free chance at $1 million because you can take your $25 entry, which I'm going to explain in a little bit. You get that for free, have a shot at $1 million. And it's not like some of those other daily websites where, let's face it, you don't really have a chance to win against what you're up against. Here on Underdog Fantasy, you have just as good of a chance to win as anybody. I'm currently in a best ball draft right now in the Best Ball Mania 2 tournament. Just drafted Justin Jefferson, wide receiver for the Purple in the 3rd round. The Best Ball Mania 2 is the largest tournament in fantasy football. Just $25 to enter, and you can win, like I said, up to $1 million because they have over $3.5 million in total prizes. You can play online or download the app. Sign up today with the promo code RADIO and make your first deposit to receive a free $25 in bonus cash. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store and register with the promo code RADIO to get $25 cash for free with your first deposit. Download the app today and to start playing. And don't forget to enter the promo code RADIO at sign up. Terms and conditions.
Listening to the fan.
Head to our contest page and register for your shot to win passes to Twin Cities Summer Jam happening July 22nd through the 24th at Canterbury Park. KFAN.com, keyword contest.
See, that song was really good until that moment. Start it over. Can I listen?
Oh, I like that.
Drum, guitar, little bell or something.
Yeah. You're going, good beat.
You're going, this is really sweet. And then all of a sudden... Why would you ruin it with a harmonica? There's never been a good song with a harmonica in it. I shouldn't admit this working at the All Sports Radio Station 10B, but there was a story, Fish Wrap Factory West Side, sports is your whole life, just sports section. June 25th, what's today?
29th.
This was last week. A Kent Youngblood story, Fish Wrap Factory West Side. What I shouldn't admit to is this is the kind of story that, forget skimming it, I completely, generally ignore it. Headline, Joseph Blair, Pablo Pregoni returned as Timberwolves assistants, Micah Norrie added. I'm not a bit, and not just because it's the Wolves. Any team that talks about, any stories that get into assistant coaches being high, unless it's offensive or defensive coordinator, because sure. We think those are so important and so big, those are big, but otherwise, linebacker coach. You really go, oh, who's the linebacker? Then do a deep dive on linebacker coach and find out about him. Generally speaking, I think most people don't. You hope that the guy knows what he's doing, right, and can coach him up a little bit, right?
I think the Vikings, within the last week or so, sent out a memo of exactly. Like 10 people that all got promotions, and I just skimmed right through.
And that's where I did the cheap shot. Don't you remember my cheap shot? I said, yeah. And Paul Allen was named chief lap dog for Rick Spielman. He was promoted to that spot. But I decided to read it. I don't know, out of boredom, or was it a hunch? I think my gadfly sense was tingling, because I found something in here that, sifting through it, that I would bet most people didn't even notice, and that's the beauty of the Common Man program. Looking for those little nuggets, those gold nuggets, as I'm panning for gold on the banks of the Gitche-Gumee. The story starts out, or rather innocuously, the Timberwolves finalized key members of Chris Finch's coaching staff Friday. The fact that two of the top three spots include assistants Finch inherited after taking over midseason speaks to the impression Joe Blair and Pablo Pregoni made. Prigioni. Blair will continue to work with the defense in a beefed-up role. Prigioni will work with the offense. The Wolves also added Micah Norrie, a 23-year NBA veteran who worked the last three seasons in Detroit. Finch acknowledged that the norm is often to clear house and hire a new staff, but Finch was impressed with the contributions both Blair and Prigioni made, and Finch said he is dedicated to developing coaches just as he is with players. That's the first thing I noticed in the story. I like that. He's into developing coaches as he is the players themselves. You can do both, and because coaches need to be developed as well,
sure,
right?
Of course.
If you're a first-year coach, whether it's just, generally you have to have had several position-type coaches or assistant-type coaching jobs before you get the big job, and so you kind of groom people. But here's what I found. So here's what Finch said. These guys did a really good job. I think they're high-level coaches with a bright future. They relate well to our players, and were certainly a part of our growth as the season wound down. It's easy to chop and change. I was going to do a golf thing there. It's part of the nature of the business, but both of them can be NBA head coaches, and why would you not want that type of talent when you already have it in the building? And I do like that approach because, generally speaking, not in all cases, but a new coach comes in, what does he do? He cleans house and brings in the guys that he knows. And there's nothing wrong with that, because I've talked about that, Tenenby, that if you get a job and then your job is to fill some spots, a lot of times you want to go with people you know, people you've worked with before, you know their woeful shortcomings, inadequacies, and you know their strengths. But I like that he says, hey, I worked with these two guys for half a year, they're good. Mm-hmm. I like what they do, and I think we can develop.
Yeah.
But here's the part that really stuck out to me. Talk about Blair. Blair is the guy that's going to work with the defense on the team. He's got his work cut out for him. For Blair, his job will be to squeeze all the defensive improvement he can out of the team. The ultimate goal, he said, is to be a top 10 defensive team. Immediately, finding a way into the top 15. Here's the money quote, what I have been preaching for years. Let's be honest here. I think defense all comes down to effort. I'll repeat it again. For all those that think, Common, get off your high horse. You don't understand the game. You in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, you played Coon Rapids Athletic Association football. You're back to you are fierce pass rushing, Rock of Gibraltar run stopping defensive lineman, and a precise route running shredded pass catching tight end, and you used to be a four handicap at golf, and now you can't break 90. But stick to those two sports. Leave basketball alone for the basketball community. Leave it to basket or all the other people. And I've said forever, I guess there's probably some techniques you use in defense, and there are some things, you know, team-oriented defense, right, or help defense and all that. But I've always said, to me, it's effort, and I've had people tell me, you're crazy. Here's a guy that's been coaching in the NBA, and he says, let's be honest here, I think defense all comes down to effort. My job is really just to get the correct buy-in from the team. So that's why, for me, it's hard for me to really to be all in with the local five, because I know they're not all in. I knew it. I knew it all along. That it's not because I'm just not very good at defense, or the offense we're playing, those guys are just really good, or the techniques that we've been taught don't translate the system and all that. No, that's not it. It's you don't want to make the effort, because there's nothing sexy about playing defense. There's nothing. It's work, and what's the word I'm looking for? There's not a lot of reward for it. You don't get on highlight reels.
You don't get attention.
Get on the top 10. It's a lot of work. You got to break a sweat, and it's not, like I say, it's just not.
There's not like individual accolades for it.
Yeah, there's not individual.
Just to help the team win.
Exactly, and it's so, you don't want to do it. You just want to fill up the basket. It's all about buying in and saying, you got to shut your guy down. Don't let him score. It's just as important to stop a guy from making a basket as it is to scoring one on your own. Now go play defense. So his job really is a simple job, but it's the most difficult job of any coach in any sport, because none of these guys have ever been. Remember when it was Finch? I think it was Finch was quoted at the end of the season doing the end of the season roundup. He said, and this is almost a word for word quote, I could be paraphrasing slightly, but he said, Ant was never asked to play defense. And he hasn't been.
No.
Because he didn't need to, because what did he do? He was a scoring machine. He's a scoring machine. Once you get down, once you get down. That's what he was. He was a scoring machine. And so if you can score, if you can put 25, 30, 35, 40 points a night, we don't need you to play defense. You don't need to. Just score. Just score points. We'll let the other guys play defense. And that's every guy in the NBA, because every guy was their Howard Pulley, their high school, their Pop Warner, their collegiate team's leading scorer. That's all they did. Now you want me to play defense? I don't play defense. I score. Now I fill up the bucket. No, pass? Are you kidding me? You ever see James Harden? James Harden has never had an assist in his entire career. James Harden just stands there. There's a back and forth, shot clock winding, and he's good at it. Barkley thinks he's the best one-on-one player in the world, I think is what he said, some quote like that. It's all about, and here's proof positive. The coach said it's all about effort. And it's, to me, that's what's the most frustrating, most maddening thing about watching a team like the Wolves get beat 150 to 148 night after night after night. It's like, put a little effort on the defensive end. And you hear the players throughout the year with the quotes saying as much, not basically saying, we're just awful at defense and don't want to try, but it's they kind of are on the periphery of it, talking about they have defensive lapses, but none of them are going to come out and say, you'll see once in a while a team and say, you know, we just weren't giving a lot of effort on defense. You know, the effort just wasn't there tonight. They'll say it, but they won't point fingers, and it's just, well, why should any of us buy in, especially buy tickets, buy into to to your team and they'll, you know, let's get behind you when you guys don't want to play 48 minutes on both sides of the floor. It's really sad. And so you don't, if you skim that headline of that story and said, ah, it's assistant coaches, it's no big deal, you miss, that was the nuts and bolts of it. And that says more about this team than anything else I've read in recent memory. Katrina Allen, she is the 2021 pro. She's one of us. She's from Minnesota. She's the pro disc golf world champion for 2021. We'll talk to her next. Common Man program on the Fan. No, I
stand my ground. The Fan.
I used to be lonely till I learned about living alone. So anyway, Tenby, I think I was right regarding the word beleaguered. Synonyms for the word beleaguered. Well, first of all, beleaguered. In a very difficult situation, the board is supporting the beleaguered director amid calls for his resignation. Synonyms: hard-pressed, troubled, in difficulties, under pressure, under stress, with one's back to the wall, in a tight corner, in a tight spot, up against it. Who was I talking about? Whoever I was talking about, oh, the Twins bullpen. Yeah, they're hard-pressed, troubled, in difficulties, under pressure, under stress. Their back is to the wall. They're in a tight corner. They're in a tight spot. Our next guest on the Connecticut Water System Hotline is not beleaguered. She is the 2021 Pro Disc Golf Association Professional Disc Golf World Champion, Katrina Allen from Pipestone, Minnesota, now in Madison, Tennessee, I believe, joins us. Congratulations, Katrina, on your world championship.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on again. How many majors have you won now?
Seven or eight.
Seven or eight majors. Where does this one rank among them?
This is the biggest win for me ever, actually.
And tell us why.
Even though I've won a world championship and other majors, just with the sport growing and how much work I put into it, it's definitely my favorite and biggest win for sure.
You went to the final hole, round four, down one, and Paige Pierce, she go out of bounds?
No, she was laying up to play for a par.
Okay.
I think her plan was to make me make the putt to push for a playoff.
Would you push for a playoff? It didn't work out that way. What happened?
Actually, I kind of, if you watched, after I got a green flag that I was safe on the green, I kind of erupted because if you were to go to Udis Live and look at how she played the holes for the Utah Open, which was a warm-up tournament for the World Championships, and then how she had played it. She had double bogeyed it three of the four rounds we had played.
Okay.
And so I knew, and because of our years of battling, I know that her approach game can go under pressure. And so I knew I had given myself an opportunity there. And, yeah.
And that's how it went.
It all worked out.
Yeah. I'm told that on 17, did you lay up so you would have a give me?
Yeah, I had a look, like probably a 70-footer, for birdie.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just something all week that told me to just get to hole 18 and be in contention, because if you looked at my stats, I was
one under, right?
I was two under going into that hole.
Two under going into that, and she had played it. She had double bogeyed it a couple of different times, right?
Yes, three of the four.
Three of the four. So your strategy then was to just get it to 18, one down, and if she lets the pressure and plays the hole as she has to this point in the tournament, and you're probably going to end up a win, and the strategy worked?
Yeah. I don't know why. I know that's not really how I would normally attack things, but I just knew if I 18 was just a hole I had to shot for. No matter if I was on the left or right side of the fairway, I knew how to get to the green, and I just felt super confident and knew if I did that, that the pressure would be on.
How many, where was this course? Where did you play?
Ogden, Utah.
In Ogden, Utah.
Yeah, it's about an hour north of Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and, you know, I know in golf, you know, not disc golf, but, you know, golf where you hit a golf ball, right? There will be certain courses will suit a golfer's eye. I know when I play golf, there are certain courses I go, well, I like the feel of this. I just like this course, and I seem to play well there. Is that the same in disc golf, or is all the courses, I know they're different, but are they all the same? Do you see what I'm trying to say, or do you find it?
I totally understand.
Okay.
So we actually play, I mean, and so here's a factor that I don't know a lot of people know, but we play to elevation. So the thinner air actually makes our discs fly not the same as they have been flying all year.
Okay.
So I guess to elaborate on that, if you're just a right-handed player throwing a backhand, it's going to want to go harder to the left and sooner. So you have to kind of adjust. The discs definitely fly really different. Yes. There are so many variables, and there are so many different courses. We actually played on a ball golf course that has a disc golf course, so it was mostly open and more trouble with, like, water and man-made OB, if you will. They like to make lines where we have to, you know, throw within the fairway. And it was a and then the other course was wooded, through the woods, very tightly wooded. For the most part, obviously, except for the ending hole.
Right.
Which, as you saw, they also made some man-made OB.
I'm told you won your first world championship in 2014. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
And someone told me that, well, I know you made $10,000 for winning the event this year, correct?
Yep. Yep.
And back then, it was $2,250. So the money's gone up four times as much in that short period of time.
Yep.
Some pretty good money in the old disc golf game, isn't there?
What's that?
There's pretty good money in disc golf.
Oh, yeah. I think if you compare it to even, like, the WNBA, I mean, I'm not sure what their endorsements are as far as, you know, if they with, like, a Gatorade or something like that. But I think we're treated very well compared to some of the other professional women's athlete sports.
All right. Someone's helping me. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, like, we're playing on the same day under the same live coverage. So we're getting, you know, we get treated very equally and we get a lot of the benefits that the men. And like I said, I don't think a lot of other professional women's sports can say the same.
When I talked about having you on today, I got several emails from people who follow the sport. They follow your career. And this emailer said he has a couple good topics for my interview, and I could use all the help I can get. He says, lately the PDGA has been called out at multiple tournaments for issues with how the setup is. The 2021 Women's Disc Golf Championship had the women playing on multiple courses without reserving time to allow the pros to practice each one before the tournament. They changed the rules this tournament for one course in the middle of the tournament. Is that true? What does that mean?
I don't really understand what he's trying to say. I had plenty of time to practice. I think what he's referring to, and I don't think a lot of people will like this answer, but that's okay. I truly believe it's the truth. And if people who know me in the sport know that this is a very sincere answer. A lot of players did not play as well as they would have liked to and didn't deal with the adversities that we had to deal with that week.
Right.
And just, I don't know if it's just with social media these days, but people like to, you know, say, oh, I don't like the courses. I don't like how this happened. And yes, in a perfect world, there were certain situations throughout the week or before practice that could have been handled differently or better, but I actually deleted social media the Wednesday before and just focused on playing and told myself there's going to be a lot of stuff going on and just focus on playing. So,
well, let's see if our emailer has controversy too correct. I'll read what he writes, and you tell me if this makes any sense. He says, some players take very, and he's got that capitalized, liberal concessions on what is supposed to happen with playing, such as the amount of time they take when taking a punt once you get to the previous. There was a big controversy on the lead women's card. Round four, hole 10 has a triple mandatory where you have to go left of one object, a post, right of another, second, and below a horizontal strap, you can see blah, blah, blah. And then he talked about Paige Pierce teed off first on the video, clearly missed the mandatory by going over the strap. Video review not allowed, and when making a call, it is on the players on the card to make that you're calling things on yourself. What does he mean by all this? Is this something that happened, and what are mandatories?
Yeah, so because of mandatories can be for multiple reasons, to protect a tee pad, protect a basket, because, you know, I don't know how to... I hope that kind of makes sense. Like, say there's a tree to the right of the tee pad, like 50 feet off.
Right.
Sometimes the easiest shot to throw is a right to left shot called a hyzer. So what they'll do sometimes is put a mandatory to the left so that you can't throw that shot. You'll have to throw a straighter shot, which is the hardest shot in disc golf. And they do that sometimes to take away that shot, and also sometimes to protect another fairway, to protect so people aren't getting hit while they're on a tee box or putting or something like that. Or because we don't have the luxury of playing on, you know, golf courses that are private, maybe to protect a walking path where, you know, other park people are sharing the park and walking for safety. So there's a lot of different reasons. This one is just to make the hole way harder, because if not, it would be more of a beginner hole. Yes, it was a very awkward situation, but I've been telling friends and family that it was probably the moment that I handled the best of the... I thought as well that she missed it, just from my angle and from her reaction, but without a spotter, someone who had a better angle than us, I just simply asked her for her opinion. I said that you had the best angle, and what do you think happened putting the ball in her court, to kind of take any stress off of my game, because I didn't, even though maybe I thought it missed, I didn't want to make a lot of commotion and drama.
She didn't fess up, or she said, no, it was fine.
She actually said, it was you guys, I would give you the benefit of the doubt. And so I just said, okay. And I went on with my round, because like I said, it's a long, stressful week, and I didn't have the energy to sit there and have an argument. And I've learned through my 11 years of competing that I actually do really poorly under that situation. It just gets me all riled up, and I'm thinking the wrong thoughts, and I'm not focused on my game. So like I said, I tried to just put the ball in her court to make the best decision, and just told myself to fight to the end, no matter what happened.
You put the frisbee in her court rather than a ball. Yeah. I guess is really what you did there. Somebody told me she's a 5-time world champ. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
So you took down the 5-time champ.
Yes.
Are you playing the Preserve Championship? I heard that's up in Clearwater coming up July 30th to the August 1st.
Yes, I will be there for sure. Very excited.
Is that TV? Is there going to be TV there and stuff? Is this big time?
Yeah, well, there's the Disc Golf Network, which is a live streaming service.
Oh, come on.
You can subscribe to it and then watch every weekend. They have press conferences and all kinds of extra stuff that you can kind of get into if you subscribe to that.
How cool is that? And if I'm not mistaken, I think we talked about this. You were bartending and you caddied for a friend, and is that what got you interested in this?
Yep. And 2009, I think. Yep.
Yeah. And then here you are. You just won the world championship. Well, good for you. Thanks for coming on with us. We'll look for... You know what? What does it cost for this? What's the name of the stream?
Disc Golf Network.
Disc Golf Network.
I think it's $8 or $9 a month. It's nothing.
Well, that's
crazy.
Stealing. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to watch. Maybe... Maybe I'll come. Well, you've got a caddy already, so I was going to volunteer to caddy for you. But good.
If you win it, can you come back in studio and show us your trophy?
Yes.
On your way back home from Clearwater.
Yes, I can do that.
We'll do that for us then. Okay, well, we wish you the best. Congratulations on winning the world championship. We look forward to having you in studio to show us your trophy when you win in Clearwater.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks, Katrina. Katrina Allen, world champion. Mystery guest coming up now?
We have a mystery guest on the other side of the break.
Because Mark Rosen is out for the entire week. And every day this week, we're going to have a mystery guest at 2 o'clock, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Mystery guest is next. Common Man Program on The Fan.
Sports Leader.
Programming on The Fan today is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
You made a fool of me, but that broken dreams have got to
end. Tension's beginning to build, it's beginning to mount. It's called Mystery Guest for the Common Man Program today. Mark Rosen is out. He was out yesterday. He's out all week. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. During the 2 o'clock hour, someone will fill in for Mark Rosen. I have no idea who they are. Tennessee's really taking this to the extreme. He's not allowed mystery guests to walk into the studio yet. Now we're going to find out.
Hold on, I got to make sure the mystery guest is out there.
Okay. Mystery guest then is not on time, so who could that be? Who is generally better late than never? Trying to figure out who it might be. Here comes Mystery. Is Mystery Guest ready to walk in?
I don't see Mystery Guest, even though I just talked to Mystery Guest.
So
maybe he got held up at the vestibule.
Well, here's the thing. Mystery Guest is the one clue is it's someone who is better late than never. So Tenneby's on the phone. The anticipation's killing me, Tenneby.
Hold on. He's on his way. I'll give you a clue.
He's on his way. Okay. All right, Mystery Guest. You know, this is the dramatic.
All right, now we are ready for Mystery Guest.
Okay, here we go.
Mystery Guest is here.
Okay, Mystery Guest, come on in. Mystery Guest.
Big buildup.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed, are you?
Well, a little bit. I got it.
No more disappointed than me.
Yeah, I'm sure I... Well, no, it's not that I'm really necessarily disappointed. I thought he was, you know, going to bring in, like...
Who's going to be like Kent Herbeck?
Well,
somebody like that.
I thought it was even going to be bigger than that.
Bigger than Herbie?
Yeah, I thought it was.
Like, who do you have in mind?
Well, I don't know. I thought maybe.
What, like the governor?
Yeah, like, well, Governor Plenty. You know, I mean, Jesse. Teepaw,
how about Teepaw?
I thought Jesse was going to come in.
It's the week. The week is young.
Yeah.
This is only the first day.
It's only the first one.
Yeah, they want you to build up. I'm kind of like considered the appetizer.
Yeah, I thought maybe Conan. He's announced his retirement, right?
Sure,
Conan O'Brien
is.
He has announced his retirement. Is that immediate or how much longer? Is he like one of those guys that does the old, I'm retiring in 10 years. They make the retirement well ahead of time?
I thought he's retiring.
I think it's his last week.
This is it. So I thought maybe he was able to book
Probably not
it.
Him, yeah.
Yeah, probably not.
No, I'm as unplugged on late night TV as you are, so I have no idea how long they've been going. I mean, to Chad Abbott, I think Tana could have gone the next level with this. He should have turned it into like a Masked Singer thing.
Right.
Where we come in wearing a head mask of some sort, and the voice gets altered, and then you have to figure out who it is. That's next year, maybe.
Can you do that for tomorrow? Can you figure that out by tomorrow?
We might need like a full body mask because...
Well, that's true.
Our guest tomorrow, you'll be able to tell just by the body shape.
Interesting. That's intriguing. Well,
I already know who it is. I know who
it is. Well, don't blow it.
I'm not going to blow it, but I know who he's talking about now.
Is he body shaming right now? Because that's not considered.
No, not at all.
I think it's probably the opposite. I think it's probably the opposite. Chisel.
So it's got that. Oh, I know who that is then.
Yeah, I do.
We all know who that is.
So that one's not that big of a mystery, but I'm not going to give it away for the people that don't know.
No, because this is the anticipation of the Twin Cities through the roof on this.
I remember there was a time when you first did your show solo.
Yeah.
You were searching for a name for the show and settled on Bumper to Bumper.
Yes.
Now I've heard it. You've changed it to Basket to Basket.
Basket to Basket. Thanks to you.
That wasn't my fault. I didn't.
That was your emailer that you.
I passed it along to you.
No, but you stuck. I'm not a fool. You set that whole thing up to get me going.
Well, not really.
No, I guess not really.
Not That's really, true. But it was just interesting because...
Yeah, he was making stuff up.
He was making stuff up.
And ever since, it has been basket to basket. That's right. The irony of it.
Well, and then he told me, you know, he basically said...
He sucked up to you.
He sucked up to me and said, you know, because what he was doing, because how did that work? He was criticizing, somebody said I wasn't talking basketball. He goes, oh, you're doing Vikings football and golf again. There are so many great Major League Baseball and NBA stories. Then being the Richard I am, when we came back from break, I said to Tenneby, what are the basketball stories out there? And he said, well, what's-his-face might be out for COVID or the season. All right, we got that covered now. And then he did another headline. I said, well, we've covered it now, and there's not more to get into.
Not much to say.
Not much to say about that. Then he said, then the defender came and said, comment, I like how much attention you give to the NBA. We're not being force-fed by the guy that follows you on basket.
Day to day.
Basket,
I mean, day-to-day. Minute by minute, hour by hour. I bet you over the last 5 months, you have talked more basketball than me. Notwithstanding when we have Johnny Athletic,
because
admittedly, I have to talk about it with him a little bit. That's a deal. In terms of non-guests, I bet you've talked more basketball than me.
I've really been on the, I won't let it die. We talked about it off air. I'm a tank it guy. I know every situation is different.
Yeah.
In the situation where this team was, the anti-tankers were saying, yeah, but we got to see how D'Lo and Big Meow play together. And we need to develop a culture.
Yeah.
Maybe we can build some momentum. I know that sounds good, but if we get off to a 2-12 start, which is likely, or maybe now, where did that momentum building?
Yeah.
The chance, and I know it doesn't increase your chances by a lot.
Not as much as it used to.
Right, but couldn't you do this too, where you say, okay, for 3 quarters, bring it to the ticket. For 3 quarters, we're going to play. Then once we get to the 4th quarter, unload the bench, maybe try some mix and match and other stuff. So you're not intentionally losing, but you are giving the other team a better chance to get back. So you develop your chemistry for 3 quarters, let those guys play together. Because if you could get like a Cade Cunningham or a Suggs or who's the other guy? Who's the big guy, Tenneby, we talked about?
I can't remember, but
like
there's
Evan
three.
Evan Mobley or something
like that. If you were to get one of those three guys, I mean, isn't that potentially a greater benefit to the team than developing a chemistry over 12 games?
Well, I call it tanking responsibly. There may be a way to tank responsibly. I actually yesterday made history because I reversed my point of view on this from even when I talked to you. And I did it because I've never been wrong before.
Right, correct.
But yesterday I felt like, okay, here's to me why I think your position is defensible, but for a different reason than you've suggested. I would say the problem was of the Wolves' own creation in this case that went beyond whether you're going to end up with the third pick or top three pick, or like the 7th pick. In this case, it was third pick or top three pick or none. So to me, the best argument for your point of view is exactly that this team still needs a lot of talent. The draft choice, the number one pick is Culver the year before, is a waste.
Right.
Ant is good. That's good. But they need more players. So to me, the number one reason to tank responsibly would be exactly that. If you can up the chance that you're going to be able to wait a year to give up that pick, then do it. And to that extent, they made their own bed because they gave up the pick for D'Angelo. And eventually they have to give up a pick.
Right.
But the point is, you want to put that off as long as you can for all the obvious reasons, because presumably at some point you're going to get better. That's the theory. So to me, the reason they box themselves in and that makes your point, I think, more agreeable is, hey, take your best shot at getting the pick, because it's not like you're going to get the 7th pick. You have 0 picks, which means you can't pick a player who, by the way, might be good there.
Right.
There's a lot of people who think this draft is 10 players deep. Not as good as the top three, but legitimately good players. Secondly, it's a trade chip. Even if you feel like, well, it's 7, we don't love that pick enough, but somebody might, as part of a package, to go get Ben Simmons or whoever. So I did do the Sarwanga yesterday. I reversed field on it. Or backpedaled on it and said, yeah, I can see where. Give yourself the best chance to come out of this draft with a pick, because you don't have a pick. And as it turns out, as of now, you don't have a second-round pick either, whatever that's worth.
No pick. Now, that means any improvement is going to have to be internally or with the free agents.
Well, they're claiming their second first-round pick, this Balmero character, is tearing up the Spanish league, and he might be ready to come over. And so that'll be like a bonus pick. That would be viewed as, okay, well, we do have a number one pick. Okay. We just got him a year late. I have no idea if he's ready or how good he is. I've seen him make a couple of nice behind-the-back moves, which are cute, but we saw Ricky Rubio do that too.
He's apparently like you in the fact he's running from his Hispanic heritage, is what I've heard. Why do I just keep the old jaw? I can't.
That's all you have.
That's all I have. You're right. That's it. That's all I have.
So at some point, when you've been in this business as long as we have, you'd like to say freshen it up, but the fact is most of us don't.
No. And so you just keep
going. They literally say, that's enough.
Right.
And they will eventually, but we're not there yet.
Well, that was so long ago. There might be some listeners that don't know it. You were accused.
Yes.
But what was the situation? I don't even remember.
I don't remember the context.
You were accused of running?
I was in an emailer. That might have even been a phone call. And I don't know what the issue was that was prompted the accusation. But
you were accused of running from?
I was running from a Hispanic heritage.
And the key to that is you're not Hispanic.
Well, that's one of the questions, because Hispanic, depending on which dictionary you look at, is defined as, South American, Central American, as opposed to from the mother country originally of Spain, which is where my family was from. But then some other definitions is widened out, so that is part of Hispanic.
So you really are running.
So I don't even know anymore, because the rules keep changing on what words apply to whatever. Yeah, he was very bothered by that.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was very strange.
And then people ask me all the time, what's the Bermuda shorts thing?
Yeah.
And that was somehow tied to Suture, wasn't it?
I know. And again, I wish I haven't done a good job.
I've lost track of recording all these the way
you did for your book. I don't think I could do a book because my memory's so bad on so many. I'd have to just embellish, which maybe you did anyway.
I did anyway. Yeah.
The Bermuda shorts thing was, Suchere told some story about getting in some problem wearing Bermuda shorts somewhere, and somehow it got tied to me, and that it's how I got fired from the Dallas Morning News when I didn't wear Bermuda shorts, I don't think, and I didn't get fired from the Dallas Morning News other than that, but that became the bit, but I don't exactly know how it happened, other than it reminds you of how in the media, we do end up getting confused with other people constantly. Like, I don't remember which story I heard that from. Was that on Barrero? Was that on Suchere? Was that on Common? I'm not sure.
Right. And then after a while, it just becomes urban legend.
Yes.
And then it becomes fact. People just, well, that's a fact. That's what happened.
I think to this day, it is in my Wikipedia entry. I'm pretty sure it's still in there that I was allegedly fired from Dallas Morning News for wearing Bermuda shorts.
And I now believe it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. Well, it's harmless, I guess. I don't, because at this point, I don't need work. I don't think it's going to cost me. It's not like I think, Bossberg's going to find out and say, well, we can't continue to use this guy. He got dismissed.
Right.
He's tainted. Right? I mean, we're kind of past that point.
Were you, before your first...
Is this all Power Trip stuff here, like these cameras?
Yeah, it's their live. They got a YouTube channel, apparently.
They do?
Have a YouTube channel.
Oh, so that's what these pedals, what do you call these things?
A tripod.
Tripods, yeah.
Well, as a matter of fact,
there's no room for our stuff anymore.
What I understand is they have camera people following the three of them in their everyday lives, just recording stuff, and they're showing that.
That wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise you?
No, the fascination.
Yeah.
I can't believe they don't have a reality television show yet.
What?
It's constant.
It's just take.
Or you just came up with it. They just now.
Baby steps.
All of a sudden they went, whoa!
Baby steps.
Did you just hear that? And right now they're.
Reality show.
You have to take baby steps.
Did you not see that on MTV? A reality show with those three?
I'd watch it.
Well, of course you would. Not only that, you DVR it.
You have to DVR it.
And look at and watch it back.
Are you here for the whole hour?
I guess. The mystery guest is here for the whole hour.
Given a choice on this, basically. It was like, we're hurting. It's like, well, we're hurting for people for the guest thing and the mystery guest thing. And I just told Abbott, I said, here's the irony of it. There's not a chance in hell that Common would do this for me. There's no chance. If it meant he had to hang around an extra 45 seconds,
wouldn't do it.
Now, again, you could say it's convenient for me to say that because my show comes after yours. And if it were reversed, I would be the same way, that I'd be right out the door the moment the show's done, but that gets in the way of my telling the story.
We are getting inundated with emails that are delighted with a handful.
Are they emotional about it?
Well, they are. It's like, thank the Lord above.
How long has it been, would you say?
It's been a while.
Someone said, it's been so long, thank the Lord above. live Super Show been too long. Thanks. Tana, well done, young man. Super Show is back and better than ever. Super Show with just a bunch of exclamation marks.
What happened to the podcast?
Well,
that kind of went
same
belly
thing.
Up.
You didn't want
that was more my fault than yours.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't want to be here at 11.
I didn't think it was going anywhere. Either.
No,
I didn't think it had a point.
Well, no, because the podcast was basically just Super Show. And we were talking about
that's true.
Sports.
Whatever.
We
yeah.
did do a couple where we talked about some non-sports stuff, which I think is better,
right?
Because I think a podcast. I mean, if people really want to know what Basket to Basket thinks about.
Well, Ben Simmons.
Yeah, they can listen to 3 to 6:30 for the podcast would be. I know what I wanted to ask you because I'm sure you weighed in on the controversy. I wasn't here for because I was off yesterday, but the rain out that wasn't a rain out and I'd like to get your take on it, what you think about that. There's other things I want to get inside your head and really try to mine for something that people don't know about.
So is this what, do you bumper music into breaks too?
Yes, that's a new thing we do.
That's funky. I love that.
I like it.
It's that bad.
No, I like it because...
It's another real current song that I obviously know very well, but I say...
You're right. We do that once in a while. We'll take music that some of the other stations in town play that are newer.
Does it go anywhere?
Well, we'll get people...
Can you relate to it?
I can.
Can the people listening relate to it?
We'll get emails.
You'll hear it on the other side of this break.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's great. Yeah, I love that. That's a great jam. That's Smashing Pumpkins or
Weezer.
Weezer sometimes. Okay.
Is Weezer current?
Yeah.
No.
Not anymore.
Weezer's not even current. No. That's the thing.
They're still around technically.
Well, yeah, that's true.
The other good thing about bumping out is then it gets me out on time.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll talk to Garci about that. Maybe it's time.
I like it.
And Power Trip does it, so that's why we do it.
Well,
and
the
case closed.
Yeah.
That's it. Wraps it up.
That's a good idea. We'll take a break. Come back. It's Super Show on the side of the break on The Fan.
On The Fan.
Try to pigeonhole me into 60s and 70s music, did you, Dan?
Is this newer than that?
This is,
Who is this?
Daft
Punk and Pharrell.
Daft Punk and Pharrell. The guy that wore the Smokey the Bear
Pharrell hat. On the Bench and the Fan?
Not that guy.
Oh.
This is the Pharrell. He wore like a Smokey the Bear hat was his thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember him.
Yeah, and this is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice song.
And what's it called again?
Get Lucky.
Get Lucky. And this... Now, well, this
sounds a little middle of the roadish, though. I mean, this is...
Well, it is old now.
Yeah, it's not new anymore.
This is like 5 years old.
How long? I'm sure it's longer than that.
A little bit soft, isn't it? It's not that edgy. It's got a nice beat to it.
Night to get lucky. She's up all night to get lucky.
Huh. Swordswoman, huh?
And what I don't know is... The accusation I just...
2013 it was released.
2013.
Okay, well, that's a little more recent than 25 or 6 to 4 by Chicago. Yeah.
Only about 43 years.
Yeah, about that.
That's all.
Yeah, longer than
And I think... I blatantly make these accusations about any music, but I think there might be real instruments played in that. You know me, I just blatantly I just blanket every song with if it's recorded. All they do is computer generate their music.
Well, there's a lot of that.
And they, what is it with the voices? They auto-tune all the voices.
This is
they could make you sound like Art Garfunkel.
Well,
close to it if they auto-tune it just right. Yeah, but...
You don't find that very authentic.
Well, you don't... Do you... sample any new music at all?
Occasionally when somebody tips me off, somebody who seems to understand what I like and said, hey, this, believe it or not, you know, this is, a lot of it would be jazz. Sometimes it would be soul.
Right.
But no, I don't a lot anymore. I live, this is how much I live in the past. For the last, you know, when I'm not on the treadmill, I do a lot of walking outside now. And most people, when they're outside, they might listen to a podcast.
Right.
They might listen to The Common Man. They might listen to music. Right. And I, over the years, generally had mainly listened to music. The last 2 weeks, I have been listening, start to finish, to a replay of the CBS News coverage of the 1968 Democratic National Convention.
Really?
Huh? Start to finish. So I'm talking about, because you can find it like on YouTube. And so we're talking like 5 to 6 hours, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I have been utterly fascinated by, now there's obviously a lot of boring stuff you got to maybe, you know, fast forward over. But I, that's how much I'm living in the past right now.
Well, and I bet you're doing it because in 68 you weren't as attuned to those.
No, I was a little attuned, but not enough.
A little bit, but you weren't. And now you know how history-making it was.
Yes,
you want to go back and relive it to see what it was like.
What it was like and the media coverage of it. The television coverage of it. Walter Cronkite, Streets of Chicago, Mayor Richard J. Daley, Gestapo-like tactics. All, by the way, these are all code words that most of the audience here probably they don't even know what I'm talking about, but the old people would. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. I'm just about to start day four, which starts with an interview side by side at the convention, International Amphitheater, between Cronkite and Mayor Richard Daley, who's under siege because the cops have basically rioted. You know, they've beaten the crap out of people needlessly, etc. So it's Cronkite grilling Richard J. Daley on. Or is it Richard M. Daley? Daley. It's the original Daley on exactly what had happened the three previous nights in the streets of Chicago.
So is this all the CBS coverage that you've listened to, the four
days? You can get them all.
But have you been listening to
Yes, I've been listening only to CBS.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Is it like now where when you turn on CNN or Fox, you know where they're leaning? Is it the same with CBS? Can you do they go left or right, or do they play it down the line?
It's a good question. I would say they are a lot better at playing it down the line. They did, though, it could be argued, I guess. I think it's just reacting to what was happening in front of them, but you could make the argument that eventually they pounded on Daley, they pounded on the tactics, and to that extent you could say, well, that was siding with the McCarthyites and with the non-Humphrey people, because that was the year Humphrey, of course, was nominated. But what impressed me, I was talking to somebody else about this yesterday, is more than anything else, is the reporters they had in the field, how prepared they were, how much they knew about what they were covering, the background they had. It wasn't like, I feel on a lot of cable news shows, where you just feel like they're making it up as they go
right.
along. And again, these are people like Mike Wallace was one of the main reporters. Charles Kuralt, Eric Severide was one of the commentators. I mean, those were the heavyweights, and obviously Cronkite was overseeing pretty much all of it. But that's what impressed me, is like, man, these guys, they knew what they were doing.
Unlike me with Katrina Allen, the pro disc golfer, where I had no idea what I was talking about.
That's the talk of the town, too.
Yeah, and I was using questions that an emailer provided that were poorly worded, poorly written. I was like today's cable news, and I was not like Eric Severide.
Or Dan Rather. That was another one of the reporters. And, of course, that was the second night of the conventions when Dan Rather got roughed up on the floor of the convention by some of the security goons. Do you remember that?
Yes.
That was tremendous.
I mean, I know all
of it. So I'm listening to all this, absolutely fascinated.
I like this.
I might do
this as well.
You got to find
it.
Well, you go. This has probably been available for a long time, and I didn't even know it. I don't know if there's like sites you can go to, but this is just on YouTube, and you in the search engine, I type in 1968 TV coverage, Democratic National Convention, and a bunch of stuff will come up. NBC's coverage, not all of them, but quite a bit. The previous thing I did was the RFK assassination. That night, the coverage leading up to the end of the California primary, and then watching what took, you know, how they covered it as it was happening. This is my new rabbit hole I'm going down.
Yeah. Well, I like that rabbit hole because I'm always looking. My rabbit hole has been find a song.
What's going on with the lights?
I don't know. They're flickering.
Like power. Flickering.
It's a power. So many people are listening to the station right now. They hear Super Show's on. Super Show. People are finding out.
So it's a surge, a power surge.
Power surge with people because Super Show is back.
Must be.
The rabbit hole I would get down, I think I've told you this.
Yes.
I'll find a song that I like. Like I'll go, Stephen Bishop, Save It for a Rainy Day. You know, a cheesy pop song.
Right.
Listening to it. Then all of a sudden I go to the Wikipedia page, find out the background vocalist Chaka Khan.
Ah.
Oh, what about Chaka? And then do some research on Chaka Khan. Then find out this, that, and this. Next thing I know, I started at 7 o'clock. It's 12:30
It's unbelievable how easy it is.
I've been watching videos and reading. And
concerts, probably, of those individuals doing that song.
That's exactly it. You know, the other day, I found myself the song Ode to Billy Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And after listening to it, I don't know why it was called that, because nobody seemed to owe Billy Joe anything. Thank you. And So you find out about
another
Bobby,
new joke?
About, that's, well, it's been around a long time. Bobby Gentry, right? Yeah. Do you know anything about Bobby Gentry? I mean, she had no intentions of being a performer, was nothing but a songwriter. Nobody went to do the song, so she did it. She became a star, won Grammys, worked with Glenn Campbell, and then like, and she did her last performance or interview in like 1970 or
something. Yeah.
And then she's disappeared. No one's heard from her since. I mean, they know she's alive.
Oh, so she's still alive?
She just dropped completely out, stopped performing, stopped writing, stopped doing anything.
Yeah.
But you start reading these things, and like you say, it's a rabbit hole. That's exactly
what it is. You keep going down the road. Well, the CBS coverage that I'm on, the commercials are eliminated. I did spend some time on either ABC or NBC one day, briefly, and the commercials were included. And even that was a revelation, because one of the commercials was Eddie Albert on a beach, and in the background, you see a family, and you see a husband, presumably, taking a Polaroid photo of his family. Now, again, today we look at that and say, what's the big deal? We got phones, whatever. But this was like early in the Polaroid deal where it's this, as Eddie Albers is noting it, it's like, think about this. You have these moments on the beach, and you don't ever want to forget them. Well, now you don't have to.
Yeah.
Now you can take a picture. And the innocence of it,
right?
Because then it was novel that you were going to instantly get a photo. And so that's another reason to kind of go back in that rabbit hole is you get reintroduced to commercials that now would seem silly and archaic.
It's funny you bring up Polaroid, because speaking of old jokes, I brought up my old joke about, I think it was Carson who did it. It sticks up in my mind, where he was talking about Cher married to Greg Allman. He said the divorce papers were out before the wedding pictures came out of the Polaroid. Boom, right? So then I brought a Polaroid and about how, you know, we started talking about it. Then I got off the beaten path. But somebody sent me an email and says, Polaroids are now back. Did you know that? That now
they are
the instant camera, where not on your phone, but you have a Polaroid, and then you wait for it to develop. That's in now. Everybody wants that again. It's a rebirth.
Retro.
We got one for my daughter for that reason. It's like this. It's like, it's hilarious to think that this is so considered so cool, when obviously, and because it is, compared to what we're dealing with the instant photo you get on your camera. So yeah, it's I mean, we can do a nostalgia hour if you want. We might lose some listeners that way.
That's okay. Well, this is kind of nostalgic. How old is this one?
Probably around the same time. Probably around 2013.
That's true.
And this was the controversy. You may have even talked about.
That's the Glenn Mason theme song too.
It is. It's a Glenn, and this is the one where there was sampling and there was accusations of stealing.
Oh, is that right? Stealing material.
Yeah. This
one. And they did. Yeah.
Because this is Marvin Gaye, right?
The original.
The original. This is a Marvin.
Robin Thicke. Yeah.
Robin Thicke.
That's right. That's right. I remember
this now. And this is a Marvin Gaye song. And which Marvin Gaye song was it? It was like, well, no, we didn't steal nothing.
We were inspired by it.
Inspired by it.
That's what you like to say. That's what you're supposed to say when you get caught.
Got to give it up.
It's a Marvin Gaye. Inspired by.
Which was it? Got to give it up.
Got to give it up. This was a got to give it up. And we would play the two together when the controversy happened. They've got to admit that they got to give it up.
Yeah,
they got to give up that they didn't. We'll take a break, come back. It's Super Show here on the Common Man program on The Fan.
All for details.
You're listening to The Fan.
Reaction, most of it positive to Super Show.
I'd be disappointed if there wasn't some savagery.
I'm with you. Yeah. You always want to see. Want to see a little negativity.
Yeah.
Now here's where again we were talking about old stories.
Yes.
That get confused.
Mm-hmm.
Bermuda shorts, the whole thing. This one says, "Didn't CJ call Big Ticket a Southern gentleman?" And that wasn't.
That was not CJ.
No, that was
an op-ed writer. Oh, my goodness. Is one of us going to remember the name?
Yep.
Syl Jones.
And I don't know what it was. He had like a he seemed, you guys seemed to have some kind of a running feud of some sort.
Well, it was during the Denny tenure. So a lot of it, I think, was related to Denny, yes, and the accusations that, you know, anybody who ripped him was racist,
right,
et cetera. But it was Phil Jones, and yeah, it was, I don't remember the specific thing, but he made an assumption, I guess.
Well, didn't I perpetrate that fraud, actually? Because it...
Yeah, actually, you did.
That's what it was.
And part of the reason I think you did, well, I don't remember. You have to remind me. I don't know why you went Southern Gentleman. Was it because...
Somebody else, I think, called you... How did that...
There must have been a history to it.
Well, no, it was the Dallas Morning News...
Oh, I know what you're thinking of. When I came to town, we talked about this, I was introduced... They ran some, what they call house ads in the newspaper, basically saying, here comes Dan Barrero. And they made it sound like I was from Dallas,
right,
as opposed to having worked most recently in Dallas. And that started an early thing of... What do you got? You know, so is he going to come in with his 10-gallon hat? Is,
right,
some guy grew up in Fort Worth or something? Or what's the deal? And that, I think, may have had something to do
and
with it.
So then he called you a Southern
gentleman
because,
yeah,
he bought into
he
it,
bought
not
into
knowing
it,
that,
yeah,
really wasn't.
And
it.
You might have, yeah, might have might have kept going longer than necessary.
And then too. Here's another one that
Southern gentleman
says they want to know which one of these annoyed you more. What made you more angry? Lavranda messing up your Valentine's delivery or, yeah, improperly sliced deli meat?
Yeah, well, I think the former. By the way, somebody told me La Veranda is still there. I don't think anything else is in Uptown.
Oh, the publicity
it's
they
completely.
Got from you, even though at the time it seemed negative, I think everybody's heard of La Veranda. Well, and the same thing happened to me.
I remember that.
Very similar
That's
to
right.
where I ordered Valentine's flowers, yeah, for my gal,
yeah,
for Valentine's Day or whatever. They came to deliver them. No one was home. They put a sticky note in my mailbox and said they're at the neighbors.
Neighbors, yeah.
I didn't check the mail.
Right.
So I go in there, my
flower,
and my neighbor doesn't come over to tell me because,
right,
I think she left the house for a few. She's not going to wait till I get home. So I'm mad at the floral shop. I say,
it wasn't La Veranda.
No,
it was a different one.
It was, yeah, a different one. And I don't know. What did La Veranda?
Well, La Veranda, I thought it was even worse because in the case of La Veranda, the flowers were never delivered anywhere.
Yeah.
And the reason they gave was they couldn't find the school. This was when my wife was still teaching. They couldn't find the school. And there was also a phone number. I said, well, anybody try calling to give? No. So in that case, they literally just said, we give up. Can't find it. Now, this was before Waze and Google Maps.
Right.
But it was a published address. It wasn't even a difficult address. And so in that case, I might have gone off on it. It was the only time I can remember in what, however many years here, 8, 20, almost 30 years, that Bossberg walked in during a break to the studio,
right,
and said, how long are you going to go with this La Veranda thing? And I don't know if it was because I was going to blow the La Veranda account or just in general Parisi Pontiac, I ruined it. We might have blown the Coil Cadillac deal after our visit with Gymnastics Guy yesterday.
No!
Yeah, he went after Mark Coil pretty hard. So the Coil Cadillac deal is probably done.
That's
and
fine.
We were, I guess they were pretty far along on
right.
it. That was the only time, Bossberg, that I can remember where he said, okay.
Could you maybe just let it
go or yeah. just over? And
well,
I might have milked it.
Speaking of that, somebody said that they did a preposterous statement nomination because who's the gymnast? Is it Wiskus?
Wiskus is the male
Shane
gymnast
Wiskus.
From Minnesota, yeah. Former Gopher.
And then the University of Minnesota sent out a congratulatory testimony. And this, the same university that canceled gymnastics,
yeah, was,
right?
They got pounded
is that
for that.
Part, is that what they were getting pounded for?
Well, who was the gymnast we had on yesterday? Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Your guy had him on
yeah.
Yesterday. Tenna had him on, too. Because I don't think Guardsy knew, so we just said, oh, we'll just put him on.
Right.
Different times of the day, get different things to get to. And it was just him answering questions. And Roethlisberger admits he's invested. It was his life. He was a big-time gymnast here.
Right.
His dad here as well. But he was pretty tough on Coil, and I did bring up the tweet, which was from the University of Minnesota account, basically trying to crow about the fact that, hey, a former Gopher in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Which, as even Roethlisberger admitted, it may have been a damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you don't do it, some people are probably going to rip you for like, oh, you don't want anybody to notice. You're not going to congratulate him. You're not going to take the high road. But on the other hand, if you try to link yourself to it in a tweet, you're going to get pounded, and you can see it in all the comments afterwards. Say, oh, now you want to take credit for it. Now you want to be connected to him, even though the sport doesn't any longer exist here at the University of Minnesota.
What did you make of the Twins canceling the game? Do you think it was because they wanted to save arms?
Yes, 100%.
And that's just 100%. That's wrong.
I hated it, but loved it because it filled up. It gave me a subject on a Sunday where I didn't have much else to talk about. I couldn't stop savaging on it. I hate it because, again, to me, I like to think that the essential, the most fundamental pact between a team and its fans that cannot be broken is whether we're good or bad, whether we're mediocre and somewhere in between, if we open the gates up and we take your money, we're going to play if we can play. Period. End of bleeping story, right? And the fact that they didn't, especially in a year where you say, we got no equity. Maybe some fans would have said, well, you know what? Might be better if the Twins and White Sox were like even. Somebody said, well, who do you want starting game one against the White Sox of that series? You want Maeda or you want Happ? Okay. I mean, I'm not crazy. I wanted to go to the game today, but but you don't even have that going for you. You can't even use that as an excuse because you've been so bad. So you got no equity. And there was, I hate to say it, but to me, even the comments from Rocco and the way the stories were written was like, wink, wink. Nobody minded this. Right. It's like they engineered a day off for themselves. It's shameful. Correct. I think they should be fined for it. I wish there was a way to find a team. Now, the White Sox did it yesterday.
Correct.
And some people think they basically did the same thing. I hate it. I can't stand it.
Right. And if, even if you have, especially when you're not in it, it's even more an excuse.
Absolutely.
Like what you said about that, well, you know, we want to save a game here because it's an important game. It's like
a bullpen's taxed.
So two guys can't pitch and tell Big Mike you're going six, because if Big Mike gives up six runs in three innings, what's the difference? He can give up three more in the next three. You're pitching six today, Big Mike. No matter what you do, that's what you do.
Absolutely. No, it was, it's so, it's smug, it's arrogant, and it basically does say, bleep you, man. We try to tell you you matter, and we really missed you when you weren't here. But what this says, what it conveys to me when you do something like this is, you guys are meaningless to us. We don't care. We don't care if little Johnny and little Judy and little Janie had never gone to a game before, and their little hearts were broken. We had a guy call email yesterday who said he went on not a blind date, his first date with a woman that he'd met online, and this was going to be their first date.
And they were, you've got to be kidding me.
It's always going to be, they park.
Kiss cam, they were going to be on.
All of that.
Maybe.
And like 10 minutes after they got to their seat, they say it's over. And he said the rest of the date could not have been more awkward after that because they didn't really know what to do, where to go. Might have eliminated the possibility of true love between the two of them. The Twins have that on their conscience that they might have destroyed a relationship just as it was getting started.
I wonder if you would have done kiss cam on a first date.
It's a good question. I don't know.
You know, because
do we still do kiss cam, or have we gotten too uncomfortable with kiss cam?
No, I think kiss cam is still on, and then most people go in it, but you always see the one couple they kind of look at each other like, you kidding me?
And why would I want to do that?
Well, especially what if it's brother and sister at the game?
You could do a peck on the cheek,
I guess,
more, that kind of affection.
David, you're on the Fan. Thanks for calling Super Show.
Hey, you know what? I'm so excited because you guys are like in the top 10 of my favorite radio personalities on KFan.
Outstanding. That's what we thought.
Good, very good. Top 10.
And you know what? If Common, if you were at the game, the Radio Romeo, you would have been taking over the kiss cam.
I don't think there's any question about
that.
Well,
there's that.
The thing is, when you were bringing up the riots, right, in Chicago in 68, right?
Yes.
And I was listening to NPR, which is, I'm bi-coastal, I guess. But they had a interview with Johnson and Humphrey in the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm.
It was just fascinating.
Yep.
And if you're interested in that kind of thing, I would highly recommend it. I mean, it was. I never actually even really listened to Hubert Humphrey talk, but he was getting chastised left and right by Humphrey or by Johnson. And it was like...
Yeah.
He was a mean bastard. Was,
LBJ?
Like,
oh, vicious.
Yeah.
He was very effective. He knew how to... He definitely knew how to twist arms. I mean, think about that part of it. In 68, Hubert Humphrey gets the nomination, and he's doomed probably from the beginning because he's the representative of the administration in charge of the Vietnam disaster. Right. So to that extent, it's a miracle. He almost beat Nixon. I mean, there are a lot of people who say if the election had been like a week or two later, if you want to use excuse computer,
right.
He was gaining momentum, but he lost. In addition, who's the other guy who turned 68 topsy-turvy? Gene McCarthy. Right. Where's he from? Minnesota. I mean, Gene McCarthy's the guy before RFK who started the anti-war political movement.
Isn't that why RFK got into the...
Yes, and he got ripped by a lot of people who said, wait a minute, McCarthy basically dove into the deep end, took a chance, and now that you see the water's warm,
right,
you're going to jump in now too, and that's part of the reason there was a fragmentation among the anti-Johnson people between the two, because there was this resentment that, wait a minute, I mean, McCarthy did all the dirty work, and now RFK is coming in for the glory.
And then Wallace took 15% of the vote, and did they think that would have, if he had not been there, would that 15% have gone more toward Humphrey or more toward Nixon?
It depends on the state, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good question, though. Wallace tech was a Democrat by
right.
party, even though he was obviously a whole world apart from Humphrey. That's the other thing. I mean, Humphrey, he was an establishment politician, but he was one of the great early liberals on race, going all the way back to like the late 40s. He's
correct.
The guy who said the Democratic Party has to break away from the Dixiecrats in the South, the segregationists.
Correct.
I mean, and so that was the tragedy of Hubert. He never really had a chance, I don't think.
Mark Rosen is a fraud guy. You're on Super Show.
That doesn't sound like my name. Well, first and foremost, Mark Rosen is right, guy. I know how that hurts so much.
Right.
But you guys are on the radio together, and I've been waiting to do this for a while. So here it goes. This is I can't believe you guys are on the radio at the same time network.
Nicely done.
I always love that.
Well played.
Yeah, well played.
First opportunity to do that in a while.
Yeah, and he liked it. Here's another email. I love hearing the background of some of the classic fan bits. Here's another question on a joke I don't really know the genesis of, but it hasn't stopped me from referencing it endlessly. Where did the Barreros against big-breasted women bit come from?
That came from a column back when I was still writing. I wrote about... What was the league, Jesse? What was the football league Jesse was involved? Was it the XFL?
XFL.
It was. I made some crack about silicone aided USFL XFL cheerleaders,
right.
Something breast related,
right?
And I think that's. Then I got a letter. There was a letter about. What's your problem with big breasted women or something
right.
like that? And then you
they thought
took
you
it
were
from
against,
there.
Yeah, against big breasted women.
And then it
women.
Became a deal of who I must have been against big breasted women. Yeah, that was the.
Which I don't think you are.
There. No, not generally.
No.
No. I mean, I'm even now, though, hesitant to take a position on it because it's in 2021, it might get you in some hot water.
Yeah.
I'm not in the mood of. I don't want to get into the business of objectifying anybody.
Can you please recant the tale about the cabal? How was it created? Who was the ringleader and the major players of the cabal?
The cabal, it was perceived that I had to have been a part of the cabal.
Right.
Denny never alleged that I was part of the cabal, I don't think, although he took his shots at me, as I found out from superstar Mike Morris and Robert Smith and others during practice sessions. But the cabal was... Right before the Giants playoff game, that they ended up making that ridiculous comeback. To that point, Denny was 0-3 in the playoffs, as I recall it. And right before the game, Leslie Visser comes on and says that the folks in the Vikings organization are alleging that there are a number of media members who are basically conspiring to try to run Denny out of town. And it was assumed I was one of them because of some of the stuff I wrote, but it wasn't. I think that list included Royce Sansevier. Was it Charlie Walters?
Well, it may have been.
And then you turned it into several other people.
I turned it into, I said, I was trying to investigate.
Yeah.
I thought it was you, Barbara Flanagan.
That's correct.
And Leonard
Inskip, a former op-ed writer, as I recall.
Only because I liked saying Leonard Inskip.
That's it.
And then Barbara Flanagan, wasn't she like...
She was like society writer.
Society writer.
Yeah.
Who had nothing to do with the Vikings.
Zero to do with it. Yeah.
I forgot about Leonard Inskip and Barbara Flanagan.
That's it.
This emailer says, "Hi, Dan and Dan. I'm 46-year-old and a child of a Vietnam veteran. Lately, I've been going through some YouTube videos of old CBS and NBC news footage of the Vietnam War. Photojournalists and reporters live in the jungles, and even a few reports live from the Tet Offensive. The reporting back then was both fascinating and harrowing. The other videos that can really kill a lot of time are videos of Don Rickles, both during the Dean Martin roast and on Carson, Love Super Show." So he's gone from the serious...
From the madcap to the macabre.
Exactly. That's it.
Yeah, well, that's what you can do. Before we were talking about this earlier in this very festive hour, you can go down the Carson rabbit hole. I did a little bit when Charles Grodin died because there was a lot of talk about the relationship between Grodin and Carson. And Carson, just watching old Carson stuff, for people who don't know it, reminded of his brilliance hosting night after night a major talk show in a way that none of the folks who are doing it today can even begin to relate.
You are correct. Thanks for coming in for Super
Show. It was awesome. It went fast. It's over?
It did go quickly.
It's unbelievable.
Maybe we should do this on a regular basis. Maybe we should every once in a while.
We have equipment to do it at home now.
Let's try it sometime.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. Good to see you. Good luck in the rest of the week. I can't wait.
What? Larry Minella guy
Louis?
Said.
Louis?
Here's what Larry Minella guy said.
Oh.
First Tenneby sniped Roethlisberger from you. Now he sniped the host of Basket to Basket before Basket to Basket started.
Well played.
We'll see you later. Next with JG. Tenneby, thanks for having me.
Hey, great job.
You as well. We're back at 12 noon tomorrow. Another mystery guest at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Well done, young man!
Listen back to any of Common Man's programs by podcasting on the iHeartRadio app or KFAN.com.